This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
That was so fucking boring. Dig through time. In response to dig through time, I will dig through time myself to try to surf for the stroke. Okay, so I will dig through time on top of that.
Some other guy two tables over is like, but I'm also going to dig through
time. Yeah, like in response, I'll also dig through time.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And, of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's you.
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play any. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 221 of the A-Team podcast. Mr. Scotty Mack joined, as always, by three of my most wonderful friends. I have with me the Silent Assassin, the Super Reporter, KYT.
Hey!
I have, of course, the ever indomitable, never egregious, consistently amazing J motherfucking Boosh.
Yo.
What's up?
Nothing is up. We're doing a show.
Nice. And also in that show, we have with us. We have with us. The almost record holding, except for a last minute choke. We have with us the almost level 2 judge.
Another choke.
Jeremy Scumbag Schofield. How's it going, buddy?
It's going, buddy. It's going.
Awesome.
Trying to bring some energy with this. Yeah, really, really good week, buddy.
Good, good. I'm glad. We have a special guest joining us as well. We have from Face to Face Games Toronto, we have the man who runs tournaments so well that he could be sleeping and still perform better than 90% of the TOs out there. We have the man
hefty.
The man recently back from his trip checking out his destination wedding location. We have with us Kelly Ackerman. How's it going, Kelly?
Good evening, folks. It's going well.
Nice. So we've got a full house tonight. We are excited. There's lots of stuff to cover. We are there's lots of magic that was had and lots of magic to be had.
Magic.
We're going to cover it all. I guess we can start the week off with we can start this week. Do you want to start with the comments this week, or do you want to talk about what we were playing this week? Somebody volunteer.
Let's do playing.
Playing? All right. Well, Jerry.
Because we can't talk about the comments. People are complaining in the comments, talking about comments. And I know we're talking about the comments by complaining about people complaining in the comments, but really, we can't talk about the comments.
So what you're saying is because they're complaining that we're not reading the comments, then we can't address them because then it'll encourage the complaining behavior?
Exactly.
Or we'll be complaining.
Yes, we cannot.
And we don't want to complain.
We don't want to set a precedent, you know, that bad behavior will get results.
Correct.
It sounds like Complainers Fight Club.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what it is.
Kelly's got this.
It's fight planers.
And then it went.
All right. So, Jer, if that's the case, then we'll come back to the comments at a surprise time when no one really expects it. What'd you play this week? You played Magic? What happened?
I did.
Didn't you have like a big tournament or something? You were preparing for Modern?
I had a PPTQ.
And how did your PPTQQQQ go?
I lost in the top 8. So that was positive.
Okay.
I brought out Trusty Old Dredge because I like my Venge Vines.
Yep.
And I had been trying to make this goofy black green version, like no red for Faithless Looting work, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
You know, I just.
Grizzly Salvage.
Grizzly Salvage is good, but I was trying to get the Dark Deals thing going on, like trying to go like ridiculous.
Okay.
So turn 3, Dark Deals, dredge the entire deck, and then kill them on turn 4.
Okay.
And it was just too cute. Too much twin, too many remands, not fast enough.
Okay.
So I kind of had like the grind out a whole bunch of games on Friday because I skipped FNM and just grinded at home on Moto.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of made the decision that I need to get the red back in here. The red's going to help me out, blah, 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 blah. So I did that, sleeved everything up, went into the tournament. And, you know, it was kind of like the standard crew there. It was at that shop I was talking about, that Red Claw shop that in the past I've had some troubles with. But it was nice to be there because it was the first time I'd been there since the change. And it was definitely better with the change. The new staff understood that if you do silly things like make it difficult for people to buy things, they won't buy things.
Oh, man, that's interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough concept.
Crazy.
So it was pretty funny. And I know that one of the guys, he actually listens to the show. So when we were there, he kind of gave me a hard time because it's like, I love listening to the show, except for when you're talking shit about us last week. And I was like, hey, sorry.
They're like, I really love the show. And then you say anything about them, they're like, you're talking shit. Like, no.
Yeah.
And so, to go along with that, though, is that they rarely speak up to say, hey, I really love the show, unless you've said something bad about them. And then they're like, so they can like couple those two comments together.
I don't think he would have.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have like not said anything if I hadn't said something.
Nobody comes to the aid of other stores. Like if I'm talking shit about Face-to-Face Toronto, like Bumhole Games or whatever you're talking about isn't going to be like, hey. Maybe they're just having a hard time. Hey, you leave them alone. No, they're like, oh yeah, talk shit about that store. Get more people into my store. Do it. They talk shit about their store, and they're like, hey, you're talking shit. Yeah, so what? Our toilet doesn't flush. You're talking shit. I used to like your show. You're talking shit.
That's never happened.
I'm not seeing at all.
That would be something to see.
It totally has happened.
So I got there and I was actually able to flip through binders, which was neat. That's something that they usually didn't let you do before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like before it would be like you have to ask specifically for a card. They'd tell you what their price was. Their price was always like TCG player high. And then they would go looking to see if they even had the card once they got you to agree to the price.
That's terrible.
What a weird way to run a business. That's like,
You care about
stores that have no prices on any cards, and then you find, so then you have to ask, like, for the price of every card, and they have to look it up. It's not like, which is so odd to me. Every card store I've personally ever been into, the people that work there actually know what they're talking about, so they, like, you'll say, like, how much is Ugin? And they'll just say, like, $30. And you're like, okay. And not like, oh, let me look up every single card. Even like I found like some of the stores in Toronto that I went to were like pretty good at that. And every time I've been to Face-to-Face, it's been good at that. So it's just
to be fair, in Toronto, we price the showcases, obviously, because
yeah, obviously.
Carry on.
I think he had more words.
I think he had more words too.
Then he died.
Oh, is he dead?
Did he actually just die? Actual death.
Yeah, like everyone thinks.
You heard it here first.
Everyone thinks he disconnected because I interrupted. You fucking.
Yeah, obviously.
Asshole. Oh my god.
I thought he just got like passive aggressive and just got quiet.
No, he's legitimately like, having interrupt me. Yeah.
Anyway, that's unfortunate. That kind of like that derails us.
We were on a good tangent there too.
We were doing really well.
Well.
And it just got all fucked.
All fucked. All sorts of fucked.
All right, well, we can carry on.
Yeah, okay, so The store was better. The store was definitely better. Good, the new people get it. So it's still run by, like, the big thing about the store is that, you know, you always find, like, stores that sell Magic cards always have a focus. Like, the Face-to-Face in Toronto seems like it's a Magic shop. You know, like, that's their bread and butter. That's what they ran out with. That's always going to be what they're going to rely on. Phoenix is like one of those things where it's like half Magic shop, but half comic book store. And like, maybe the comics are more important. Maybe the Magic's more important. You don't really know, but there's always kind of like that thing where like there's certain stores that just kind of lead off on like a key piece. And the store that I was at, was a miniature store. So lots of Games Workshop stuff, a lot of, I don't know what the other games are called. They have like
Warhammer and that sort of shit.
Yeah, the Warhammer, and then like there's other games that are miniature games that are not Warhammer, but I don't really know any of those things are called.
X-Wing?
War Machine.
Yeah,
X-Wing, they're just getting into. X-Wing. So that's kind of their thing. Yeah, so these guys, like, again, the managers, all that, but they got a Magic guy, and the Magic guy gets Magic, and he understands what you need to do to run a tournament, and he understands what you need to do to sell cards without driving people absolutely crazy. Now, you know, like, they don't have, like, the full time, like, we can go in and set our pricing based on what's going on in our community. But, like, just as, like, a nod and stuff like that, you know, the imitation is the finest form of flattery type thing like that. Their pricing is, nothing's priced on the cards, and all they do is they look it up on Face-to-Face. So, like, that's their pricing system, is that just whatever Face-to-Face Canadian prices. I'm like, okay, I can live with that.
That's exactly what I do.
There we go. Kelly likes it. The store likes it.
Kelly, you were saying, before your internet exploded that you price the showcase, but then everything that's in the binders in the back, like, none of that's priced. You look it up.
None of it's priced. We just look it all up. But we've got laptops and stuff available. And if someone's like, I want to look prices up on our own, then we give them a laptop. If they want us to, we do it. But we've just always got people there to do it. And then it saves us like hundreds of hours of labor each week repricing binders as things fluctuate, right?
Yeah. And I mean, like, your buy list prices are pretty good too in that regard, right? Like, Matt's always just like updating them, and whenever he does, he just ships you guys a list or updates it in the back end, and like, you guys have a system for that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so funny too, especially now that the American dollar has swung. If we can talk finance for a minute.
Holy shit. MTG Finance, hashtag adult.
Yeah. We're coming at you, Brainstorm.
But it's so funny because, like, you know, we're on, you know, the Montreal store is on top of things. So they adjusted prices as the dollar changed, right? Whereas a lot of the stores in town just continued using Star City or TCG or whatever, which is all in American, but then wouldn't do the conversion. So, and then a lot of the, like, trade grinders and stuff also just still use that. But there's often times when people are, like, trying to, like, trade and sell stuff in trade groups on Facebook and whatever. And it's like, they're asking for like 80% of Star City, but in Canadian. And I'm like, our buy price is like 85% of Star City in Canadian. Like, it's pretty crazy how much the exchange rate has affected card prices.
Yeah.
And how slow people have been to catch on to that. Cause it just hasn't been an issue for like, what, 8 or 10 years since the dollar was this bad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's really hitting. And I mean, you start to see it at things like, when you go to Grand Prix and stuff, mm-hmm. like, that's when you really start to see the big difference.
We've for the first time ever, Schmaltzy, like, Matt's doing a separate buy list for whether he's taking a show in Canada or the States.
Yeah.
Just different numbers, because the math is actually different, right?
Yeah.
Is his nickname officially Schmaltzy?
Yeah, Schmaltzy.
Yeah.
I know we call him Schmaltzy, but I didn't know that Schmaltzy was like a universal thing.
We're fucking pioneers.
Really? That's fucking great. Because I was actually referring to Schmaltzy at this tournament.
There you go.
That's great. There we go. So Schmaltzy. Great.
Yep. It's official. He's going to love this.
So you went to top 8. You lost in the semis, or you lost in the top 8 to Twin, you said?
No. So round 1. I have to sit against Marcel.
So here I go to jump to the top 8 loss, and he's like, no.
No, we're round right 1. Round 1, I got to play against fucking Marcel with Twin.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, oh, fuck. You know, like, this is a matchup now that's not good for me, and I got to fucking beat Marcel of all people. He's probably the best guy in the room. This sucks. So game 1, he gets 3 lands, and he doesn't get any more lands. And if I recognized, if I realized, if I knew that what the top four draws, like top four cards of his deck were going to be, and that they weren't going to be land, the game would have been over much quicker. But I had to sit there and play make-believe that I had something to stop him from comboing me when I didn't. But if he had drawn the fourth land, I couldn't just have everything tapped out and have him just kill me. So we kind of played like this long, drawn-out game, probably like 8 or 9 turns, and then I kill him in that spot. So really, really awkward game. Game two, we play back and forth. It goes forever. I keep the mana open to pretend like I've got something. And eventually he kind of gets me into a spot where he like does like a double like tap down my lands and he's able to go off, you know, me not having any mana open. And he kills me. And then game three, it was just like I literally had everything. So I sat there and got like 4 or 5 guys out really early on. And then was able to keep those creatures in play and kept drawing lands and stopped dredging because I didn't need to dredge anymore and just had the answers in my hand. So we kind of played into like this like weird thing where he's like, tap down this, I cry and kill his guy. He does a counter for this. And then he tries to cast the Splinter Twin. I blow it up. He casts another guy to another like Deceiver Exarch to untap it before my Golgari Charm would have like killed the enchantment to go off again. And then I have the Rakdos Charm still. So it was just like this like really weird, convoluted, drawn out last turn. But I ended up winning and I was really excited because I didn't think that that was going to happen. And then proceeded to like play against like all kinds of like weird matchups. I played against Skred Red, which actually won the tournament.
That deck's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Is this the like turn one Blood Moon Trinisphere deck?
No. It's not the all-in red, but it's the like a red control type deck. So it runs Blood Moons, it runs Magus of the Moons, it runs Koth of the Hammer, it runs Skred, Pyroclasm, Lightning Bolts, Boros Reckoners. What else is in there? 2 types of dragons. So just like this, like kind of big red deck that has a lot of ways to kill creatures early on, and then it has Blood Moon's main deck. Also runs what's that stupid card called? Relic Progenitus main deck. It's funny because I sit down across from the guy, Josh St. Amand. He's a good Edmonton player. He hasn't really done anything outside of Edmonton. Like he does travel to events, but I don't think he's ever hit it big outside of the Edmonton crowd. But if you show up to an event, you know who he is and you know that he knows what he's doing. And he's sitting down. He's like, I don't think this is a good matchup for me. And he's like, turn one, Relic Progenitus. I'm just like, why you got to be that guy? Like, why you gotta play against the dredge deck, know exactly what you're playing against, say you don't think it's gonna be a good matchup, and then literally, like, rip me to pieces with, like, Pyroclasms and fucking Relics right off the get-go. So, so it's like, that didn't work out, and then I played against, like, not a twin deck, but oddly enough, a Delver deck, and I beat the crap out of that, then I played against Affinity and had a really close one, so I was like, 2-2, and it was 5 rounds, and I'm not feeling very good that I have like any sort of chance in this tournament. But you know, you gotta go for it anyway. So I played the last round against a guy who's playing like the Jerry Thompson, Brad Nelson deck from Pro Tour Return to Ravnica, like the Nidmagus Elemental
deck
with Clin Fiends, and then they also had
Monasteries. Forever ago.
Yeah, but this guy he's kind of got like he's an Edmonton Tom Ross type guy where it's like he's always playing some hyper aggressive deck in every format. Right. So every time you sit down from this guy, you know it's like this guy's trying to kill me in like a couple turns. Yes. And instead of just playing Infect like any other regular degenerate, he's just happened to be playing this deck. And we played it out and I managed to beat him. And at that point there, we're looking at it. It's like, okay, well, there was tables 1 and 2. So the top 4 people all could draw in. And then there was tables 3 and 4, and both of them were playing when we were playing. So we're like, okay, well, if they both play, and then table 5 or whatever like that had missed out, and table 6, I was at table 6, me winning, I should be able to sneak in. But what happened is when they found out that I had won, they drew. So it was one of those things. Like, they did that kind of play. So they figured out what was going on, and they drew. But then, because this is like such a casual store, and it was a big casual crowd. Like, this is not like a very...
I'm surprised they allowed draws.
Competitive. Well, yeah. But it wasn't a very competitive store. It turns out, like, that I shouldn't have made the top 8. I should have been in 9th place. But 2 guys just left. They just dropped and left.
Like, I'm over this. I've got to play some Magic. It was fun.
So one of the guys at the table that drew, he drew just because he was leaving.
Oh.
It was just bizarre. So it's like, okay, I'm actually ninth. Well, that sucks. And
like,
then
Jeremy goes to a tournament in super casual town and then just like spikes it.
Yeah, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like, and our eighth place person is this, and it wasn't me. And they're like, oh no, he went home. Oh, okay.
Ha!
Well, then you're the eighth person. So it was just like really messed up type tournament.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So yeah, I ended up playing against Red Green Tron, and yeah, they have Relics main, and they play Pyroclasms. And they play Wormcoil Engine, so yeah,
good game.
And then yeah, game two, I tried to play keep an aggressive hand, and I didn't hit a second land, and that was that. But I was happy because everyone was kind of giving me a hard time, especially Marcel, like asking why I play Garbo decks, and then I like beat him round one. So
nice,
that made me feel really good. Yeah.
So it's funny that you made the comment to say, "Well, I played against all sorts of these different crazy decks," and I'm like, you realize your opponent said exactly the same thing about you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know that the Dredge deck was one of those weird decks. So, I'm perfectly okay with that.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And cool. Then aside from that, I got to just dram a bunch of Magic Online. I'm very happy that it turns out Black-White Warriors is still draftable.
Yep.
And I've been... doing that. I've just been forcing it and making some tickets, so.
Nice!
Yeah, life is good.
It looks insane going forward with the new set.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Black-White Warriors kind of loses out because all of, like, the strong, like, the cards that really gave you benefits for playing Warriors, like your Chief of the Blades and Chief of the Scales and Raider Spoils Raider and all Spoils, that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, they're all gone, but I don't know if I care. Because
draft is going to be like, it's going to be so different. It's going to be unrecognizable once, because yeah, like two of the three packs are changing, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be,
yeah, like, it'll be totally different. Yeah.
What I do like is that this time now you're drafting Fate Reforged last. So, okay. So like you won't kind of have that opportunity to just open the bomb rare and then dive in on the color. Because like all the rares in Fate Reforged are insane, right? So it doesn't really matter what color you get or which one you get. Like, they're all basically first pickable regardless. So now that it's going to be sort of pack three, it'll make for an interesting playset because, you know, you may open up your bomb rare and it could be in totally the wrong colors that you're in, and with way less fixing, you're going to have to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or then it's just like every other format.
Right.
You should be doing that anyway.
Right, but my point is that in this format, like a lot of people have been pissing and moaning at, you know, the sealed format and that sort of stuff, for Fate Reforged and Cons, just because they're like, you just always take the bomb and you go forward from there, or, you know, people are just pissing and moaning that the sealed format is too strong because you get three of those bomb rares and then infinite fixing in your three packs of Cons. So, with Dragons entering and there being way less fixing, it's going to have far less of an impact, is all I'm suggesting. I think it'll be a healthier format in general.
Yeah.
So
I can get behind that.
I'm really, yeah.
Yeah, so, Jay, did you play any Magic this week?
I FNM'd and...
Didn't you blue-black this week?
I did, like, a wacky draft, which was kind of garbo. And I also did a grid draft last night.
Grid draft?
Cool. You picked for your wacky draft, I gotta know.
What's that? Sorry?
What packs did you end up with for your wacky draft?
Yeah, so the way that we did wacky draft, which I don't know if this is normal or not, because I've done a few wacky drafts and we've never done it this way before, is so you go for like pick order, but it's pick order for like packs. So let's say I go first and it's like the four of us or the five of us and some random Jobin. So what I do is I can give a pack that's in the pool to any person that doesn't have this, like the pack, like the maximum packs. So in round one, the maximum packs is one and so on and so forth, right? So if I go first, I take like Born of the Gods and I give it to Scotty. And then Scotty's next and he takes like fucking Theros and gives it to KYT and so on and so forth, right? So you can, it's kind of interesting because you can do things like, you can say, I'll give you World Wake if you give me Zendikar, and things like that. And you can do stuff like you can hook someone and give them like Weatherlight, which is like sweet to open, but like is like a is a terrible on power level. Like it's not even close. And then you can like give them that if they already have like something bad, like fucking Born of the Gods or Homelands or something. So I got, what did I get? I got Theros, Dragon's Maze, and then I got like one sweet pack. I think it was, I want to say Scorch, which like, so sweet is like kind of, oh no, it was a Shadowmoor block set. It might have been actual Shadowmoor.
Sweet.
If I remember correctly. So it was not bad. My deck was like hot garbage. It was like I tried to go just like blue X flyers, but there was somebody down the road from me doing the same thing and he got all the good ones.
Mm.
And I went 0-3 like promptly. Like I just got Rancho relaxed. So but yeah, it was like fun. It was like fine. It was a little thing different than Cube or whatever. And then I went 2-2 and FNM with blue black. So blue black's been a little weird because my meta just keeps changing all the time. Where I'll go and it'll be like creature decks everywhere. And then, so I will pick like, you know, a main deck that like is good against creature decks. So main deck Wraths, main deck Bile Blights, main deck Drowning Sorrows, stuff like that. Not main deck, what's that card called? Grind Clock. Right, that's like a bad card against all these little wiener aggro decks. So then I will go, and the next week I'll play like all like weird control decks. So I'll do a little bit more tweaking. Then I'll go and play a bunch of creature decks, and I'm like, fuck. So I can't get out of the 2-2. Last week was 2-0-2. I can't get out of like the 2-2 zone with this blue black deck. It's like really fun to play. Still, although with 27 lands in the deck, I find like this time I was getting like quite flooded, and it was kind of annoying because I was getting my what's that card called that I play? Dig Through Time. Getting my Dig Through Times in batches, so I would either have none or I would get all four of them.
Ugh.
So it was like, well, this is great. Like, am I taking a Dig Through Time and a counterspell, or am I taking two counterspells and throwing away a fucking Dig Through Time? And like, and then I probably am playing this wrong, but I very rarely take lands with Dig Through Time. And like,
yeah,
so I'll,
you should.
And I think I should be taking them, but like, what happens is I'll look at my hand and it won't be like super great, and I'll be on like, say, five. And so end of turn, I'll dig, and I'll see like counterspell Hero's Downfall and like say three lands, and then like I don't know, something else, and I'm like, well, am I taking like one counterspell that I can cast and lands, or am I taking counter removal and cast both, or am I taking like counter seems insane because I'm gonna untap, I'm gonna draw a card. It's, if it's a land out of 27, great. If it's not a land, I still can cast both of the counterspells in my hand. So I just don't know what to do in that scenario. And I feel like I should be taking like a lot more lands, but it just feels so fucking anti-value to dig and take like a land or two, and then like, and then be like, untap, fucking have nothing, like, I guess, I don't know. And I mean, it's good because later on it sets up my Ugin, but I feel like I'm getting, like, when I went 2-0-2, I lost to decks that basically just, I couldn't find anything but land. So it's difficult to know, like, how to make your plays and your decks better, because I felt like a lot of my losses, like, I was doing fine, and then I would brick, like, in my first loss, I bricked, like, 13 lands in a row. So, but in round one, I played against Sultai Control, like, old, not-tweaked Sultai Control. And I just, like, absolutely just ranched him, just crushed him. And then he sideboarded really oddly. So his deck was still like a weird control deck, but he sideboarded in like Rakasha Death Dealers, and I didn't see Courser's main in the first game, but they were main. He just didn't get one. But But so he, of course, he curves out perfectly and goes like turn two, Rakash of Death Dealer, turn three, Courser, and then just kills me with both of those because he has counterspell backup for the one removal spell I draw. And I can't for the life of me find a wrath. I just brick lands or dig lands. Like I dug a seven lander, which is like, how do you, that's unbeatable, right? You don't come back from that. So that was like unfortunate. And then in game three, he kind of did the same thing, but I could only kind of find like some answers, and they were just coming slowly. So I would find a counterspell, then I would find a removal spell, then I would kind of find nothing for a bit and just kind of be bricking. And he just like landed a Rakash, a Death Dealer, and he played it really well. He just played no other threats the entire game. And of course, he could have, because I took out a lot of my wraths, because I was under the impression he was playing no guys, right? So, but yeah, he just played a Courser and played a Rakash, a Death Dealer, and then revealed a Courser on his first reveal, drew it, and then he got lucky and revealed lands every other turn and didn't play his second Courser and just beat me down like that. I don't know. It was like a fine match, whatever. And then in game match two, I was paired up against Matt Telgen, who's like a super Calgary bro, and he's playing red-white midrange with Purphoros. So the way that, for those of you that don't know at home or maybe on the cast, the way that that deck works for his deck, like, because his isn't like a straight net deck, but is basically like, it's almost like an aggro killer. It's like a weird midrange deck in that, like, all of your threats are fast and aggressive in terms of, like, the format, but they're not as fast as the aggressive decks that are out there with, like, one and two drops that are crazy. But then they do things like, he plays, like, Brimaz, and he plays, like, Hordling Outburst, but he plays them with, like Arois and Purphoros, and then he also has, like, one copy of the White God. I don't know, Heliod. So, in game one, I trounce him because he can't do anything to me because I, you know, draw like three wraths. And then I fucking get super lucky and he plays, I don't know, two guys, because if he plays one guy and I have one removal spell that isn't Bioblight and he knows they don't pay, like, Bioblight's main, then I can kill it with my one removal spell. Or if I happen to hit a wrath, because he knows I don't have a wrath. If he plays two guys, then I kill one. He can still attack me with, like, the Brimaz or whatever. He played, like, the 4-2 guy that has haste. And when your guys hit, like, your opponent, they get a counter on them, whatever that guy's called.
Shaman of the Great Hunt.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So he plays both of those. And I get lucky and draw... I have a Hero's Downfall in hand, and I draw a Bioblight, and I'm able to, like, blank his turn. I have, like, a 1 of Bioblight in my deck. I'm able to, like, blank his turn and then, like, kill him with, like, I don't know, like, a fucking Purlink Ancient that he just can't deal with that. Game 2, he, on turn 4, he plays Purphoros, and my deck can't deal with Purphoros. So Purphoros is when a creature comes into play, deal 2 damage to you.
Yeah.
So he's literally playing, like, top deck against top deck wars against me, and I'm digging for an answer to kill him, because my deck has, like, one Purlink Ancient in it and Ugin's to kill you, and nothing to gain life. So I basically am just playing, like, a do not draw anything game. And the problem with Purphoros too is that it reads when you cast a creature, I believe. It might be when it comes into play.
It's when it enters the battlefield. It's not
when it enters the battlefield. Oh yeah, okay. So I can draw counters and live, but I'm for some reason only drawing removal and wraths. So I'm like, great, I'm not going to take any superfluous damage from this, but at the same time, he's like, untap, top deck, oh, Hordling Outburst. I guess I play that. Do you have a counter spell? And I'm like, nope. Take 6, go, and then I, like, untap Drown in Sorrow, scry away a scry land, draw a scry land, scry a Rehill land, draw a Hero's Downfall for the, like, Brimaz that he plays, so I've taken now 8, and basically that's how the game went. I got him down to 3 eventually, and he just ripped another creature, and I didn't rip any counterspells. And then in game 3, I just absolutely destroyed him. I was able to draw a bunch of my removal, and then he had nothing in play when I had an Ugin in play. I ticked Ugin up so that I could ultimate him and keep the Ugin, because the only permanents in my deck are one more Ugin. I believe I took out the Ashiox, or he had killed all three of them already, and then like a Pearl Lake Ancient. That's the only permanents that are left in my deck. So I'm going to gain 7 life and draw 7 cards, but I'm not going to probably be able to play anything. So I wanted to keep Ugin around. And he had nothing on board. Like, basically anything he drew, he had to play to try to attack my Ugin. And every single time he did, I just killed it or countered it. So I'm feeling pretty good, feeling pretty lucky. And I ultimate my Ugin, and I draw my 7 cards. It's like 5 lands, a Hero's Downfall, and then the last card I draw is fucking Ugin. So I just replay Ugin.
Oh, God.
Sack old Ugin and then shock him or bolt him. So in on my whatever turn that is, I've now fucking ultimated and, like, gotten an Ugin back at, like, 9 counters or whatever. So he's actually just dead.
Yeah.
He scoops it up. And then match 3, I play against, like, Jeskai, Homebrew, Jeskai, Newbie, Edmonton guy. And he is playing like a really resilient deck. Like, I haven't played against Master yet, the white one that makes prowess guys.
Yeah.
That thing is super fucking annoying.
Yes.
That is a super fucking annoying card. Like, I was kind of curious as to why it was $30, because I heard that it saw play in like Legacy, and I had literally never seen anyone play a copy of it. And yeah, like, that's a good card. Update, in case anyone didn't know that. Filling you in. So, he, like, just ranches me. And then, in the last match, I don't even really remember the game. I won it and went 2-2. So, it was fast. The changes I made to the deck, I played 3 Grindclocks main. Which...
Wow!
Yeah.
What?
They were insane. Every single game one, I had one on turn 2. And every single game, like, against Sultai, he wasted 3 Sultai Charms trying to kill it. And I got it up to 6. And he just killed me before I milled him out. But he wasted 3 fucking Sultai Charms trying to kill it. So, there's that. And then,
I mean, truthfully, Sultai is probably the only deck that has main deck answers to that right now.
Yeah, yeah. So I was quite fucking disappointed that was the only fucking match where I, you know, could have gotten him, and he ended up just being like casually, oh, Jeskai Charm at the other game. And then the other matches that I played, like, weren't really, like, obviously it doesn't really fit into those games, right? I'm not keeping Grindclock in against aggressive decks.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Grindclock's really great against aggressive decks when you are controlling the game, but that's not what you play. You don't play for what-ifs and stuff, obviously, right? That's kind of a discussion that I got into with somebody that was there, and they were like, well, I think you could have left them in because of these wraths and whatever, and you could have sideboarded differently and kept them, or you could have, I mean, you know, like, you took out, or you left in Ashiok, but you took out Grindclock. Don't they do the same thing? And it's like, well, not really. But yeah, so 3 Grindclocks main, when your meta is all control, is fucking bonkers insane.
Yeah.
But when your meta is not all control, like when your meta is shifting constantly, or you happen to hit the other half of the room and it's all aggro creatures, then yeah, it's a little difficult. But it's such a good card, and you feel like it almost makes you feel like the Mana Leak Delver games, like where you are in the driver's seat, and no matter what they do, you don't care. Because when you have a Grindclock online, it's almost like what I was describing with the Sultai player, where he had, like, the Death Dealers and stuff. You just feel like you never have to play another card. You play that card, wow, and you just tick it up until you hit to 5 or 6, depending on how, like, what they're playing. And then you just sit on your counters and your removal, and that's all you do all day, is you just mill them out, and they just get to this, like, really, like, depressed, forlorn attitude, and you just, like, every single thing they play, you're like, no, counter that, Treasure Cruise, dig for 3 counters, sweet, I'll throw 2 of them, or 1 of them away and keep 2 of them, like, doesn't matter, what if I have lands or ever play an Ugin, because the game's gonna be over before then, like, la-di-da.
Wow.
Yeah, So it was good for that. But like,
and
I said,
it survives your Ugin activation.
Yeah, exactly. It does. So. And then like getting it on board, like where you go turn two, grind clock, turn three, Ashiok is bonkers. And that happened once or twice. And they just feel like I said, like super demoralized. But yeah, so I made that change. I also put in a Pearl Lake Ancient. So I was playing two Ugins and two Pearl Lake Ancients as like my big finishers.
I think the second Pearl Lake is overkill.
Yeah, and I didn't find that at all. I still had lots of games where I couldn't draw one of them when I needed it.
Yeah.
And then it like there's lots of times where you can't afford to bounce your Pearl Lake Ancient to your hand if they can remove it. You have to like let it die so you can untap and have lands to actually play the cards in your hand. So there was times where I had to let my Pearl Lake Ancient die and then play another one. And it definitely like got me either the win or kept me there. And like I said, it depends on what you're doing with your deck. Like my deck just didn't perform well. Mm-hmm. So if my deck was performing better, like if I wasn't hitting like seven land dig through time, then I think there'd be situations where, yeah, you have an opening hand of like Pearl Lake, Ugin, two lands and a bunch of spells. And it's like, oh, that's super awkward. Or where you draw Pearl Lake after Pearl Lake. But the thing that I didn't realize with Pearl Lake is that it has prowess. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's like super relevant in this deck because yep. Those are the only non-creature spells you have. Or sorry, those are the only creature spells you have.
Yeah.
So other than land, every other card in your deck turns him on.
So what did you take out of your deck for the grind clocks?
Let me look that up because... Oh, that's in our last episode on manadeprived.com. So I can look there for a quick reference guide.
I love that website.
It used to be good. Burn, KYT. So...
Just no words to defend himself. He's like,
I
checked out so long ago.
Before you fucking...
What are we talking about right now?
before you introduced Kelly as the guest, I was going to be like, we have a special guest tonight. He was on a couple of our first podcasts, but you haven't heard from him for a while. It's KYT. Okay, so the cards that I cut for three grind clocks was the one Bioblight main. One negate main, and then I think it was Silence the Believers.
Okay.
Was the other one that I cut.
Alright.
I don't really actually like Silence the Believers at all. I think that's like super overkill. I think I would rather just play like a third Crux of Fate. I don't actually know why Silence the Believers is there. Maybe for like blue-white heroic? Maybe?
It's just generally really good against Abzan, I think. Like, you know, most of their the Abzan midrange deck. Most of their creatures are fairly big, and, you know, you just, like, rip it off the top and kill two rhinos, and they get ranched.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. But
that
was decent against, like, Rakasha Death Dealer and stuff like that. They couldn't
really do
it. So it's, like, a way to kill something that had that was resilient against you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true, too. I don't know, man. Like, it feels like, I just feel like there's diminishing returns on your second Pearl Lake Ancient, and I'm kind of like, I'm of the mindset where if you're playing it and you can't protect it, then
you probably shouldn't have played it.
But like there's turns where you have to play it because you have counter spells in your hand and you have no removal and they're going to kill you and you don't have a wrath. So you just don't block, like you just don't play it and you fucking die.
Okay, but like in that situation though, I think that that's an example of worst case scenario as like which can be just as damaging for evaluation purposes. As magical Christmas land, so I feel.
But that's why I'm playing the second version, right? Like I found like I needed a threat, so I'm like trying to just increase my threat. Like I could just play three Ugin. I actually was gonna play three Ugin.
Okay.
Because like I just found like if you can't get your threat with 27 lands, you do a whole lot of sending around, and if they land something that. Can get around you, or these guys that have dash make a creature, or prowess make a creature with prowess.
Yeah.
Like you need a way to stop them, right? And so traditionally, like they don't have anything in their deck that will kill your Pearl Lake Ancient, let alone two things because you can bounce it. But it just kind of stops them from attacking you. You're basically playing it as like Wall of Ice almost.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, no, like I get that. I just I don't know. I find it I find it hard to subscribe to the second copy of it, that's all. Just personal preference, perhaps.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, perhaps it is.
Yeah, yeah, and then...
You said
then,
that you were doing okay based on the metagame, right?
Yeah.
Then why did you decide to like go all out on grind clocks?
So because I went 202, and I needed a mirror breaker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sure. This deck, I find this deck's like really difficult to break the mirror, or like not just the mirror, but just like any control mirror, because you don't have. Like against Abzan control, they can just Rhino you, and even if you kill their Rhino, like they still drained you. Tasigur, Whip Deck, Sidisi, like you don't have the same kind of, I guess, threats as them, and you have no way to interact with their graveyard. Like you have no way to stop them from Tasiguring something back or whipping back a Rhino to kill you, right? You just hope you have a fucking Hero's Downfall when they do that, I guess, or a Perilous Vault online. So, I've just played it as a mirror killer, and nobody, like, sometimes my meta is one that it'll change based on what's happening, but they don't, a lot of times they won't change to attack you, you know what I mean? So, like, if control is taking over, they won't necessarily tweak their decks to beat you, which is, like, super possible, they'll just completely switch to a different style slash color slash method of deck. But it's not like, oh, control's everywhere, let's play red deck wins, because that'll hose them, which is true. They'll be like, oh, my deck is losing quite a lot, I just want to play something different. And they won't pick control, because control's everywhere, so they'll pick, like, back to Abzan, like what KYT was playing, right? And so you need some, like, I just found with all the control everywhere, I just needed something to just break them, and it's really slow, but against the mirror, they, like, as soon as you play it, they're just like, what the fuck card is that? And then they read it, and they're like, is this even legal? Because I have mirrored in one. And I'm like, yeah, I was in M15. And then they're just like, what the fuck? And then every turn, you're like, end of turn, put a counter on it. And they just go, like, they shuffle their hand, and are, like, doing math and trying to figure out how to beat this grind clock. And I never got to have more than one on board at the same time, which would have been super fun. But having it and Ashiok on board at the same time and being, like, mill you for 9, go, is really backbreaking. The problem, I mean, like, also is that you're feeding their delve. But because you have so many counter spells and removal, and then, like, wraths and stuff, a lot of times it doesn't matter. Like, you want them to be using their delve aggressively because you don't want them to be able to delve later when you're out of gas. So it'd be nice if it was like Keening Stone. I would prefer if it was Keening Stone right now with the meta where people are filling up their own graveyard.
Yeah, I agree. Keening Stone
would be fucking bonkers, but
yeah.
And I mean, like, grind clock might not be the right answer. Like, I've just got it tech from somebody else.
I think it's perfectly fine to break the blue, like, to break the blue-black mirror. Like, yeah. I think it's fine. I think, like, that if the Salte player is capable and has a multitude of those Salte charms in their deck and they know what's going on, then, you know, maybe it's only just a distraction. But,
yeah,
you know, like, I your choice to main deck them is interesting, too. It's obviously based on your meta, but, you know, there's a good chance that they're probably just good enough for sideboard at the very least. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you obviously made the play to your meta, and
I always do.
Yeah, so I mean, like, so
I think that's what a smart player does.
You can't be faulted for that, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't recommend everybody to go and take grind clocks to a Grand Prix, but, you know, it works real well if you're in a control right meta. Yeah.
Everyone, go online, buy all the grind clocks.
Kelly's just like furiously increasing the price of grind clock right now.
Yeah, it's like $12 now.
Yeah, nice. The other thing was, like, grind clock is like $1.
Yeah.
So I could spend $3 and maybe ranch someone with a fucking grind clock. And if it doesn't work, then I don't, like, who cares?
You're only out $3, yeah.
I'm out $3. Like, and my meta people are like, hey, is that fucking grind clock main? And I'm like, yeah. And then they, like, high five you and they're like, yeah, how many are you playing? You're playing one? And I'm like, no, I'm playing three. And they're like, three? Man, I thought I was lots at two. And I'm like, yeah, you play Grand Clock Main too? And they're like, you know what I'm saying? So I could sell these for $2 a piece now, probably, MTG Finance hashtag. So for me, the fucking Sultai charm or Sultai player wasting 3 Sultai charms on Grindclock instead of like saving them for my Perlic agent, which, you know, I mean, not saving them, but when I played the Perlic agent, that is an answer because he doesn't know what I'm playing, right? And then also just not using them to double, like to draw 2 cards and loot against the control deck is like great. I want him to try to kill my fucking Grindclock, right? Like, I don't want him drawing 2 cards and discarding 1. That's fucking terrifying against the control player.
Yeah.
So, I was happy with that. I mean, obviously, don't play a fucking Grindclock for that reason. That's just, like, a nice side effect, right? So, and then last night we grid drafted the cube. So, for those that don't remember what that is, you 14 times... You take a pile of cards and you lay out a 3x3 grid in the order that they come off the top of the pile. So you don't get to like look at the 9 cards and put them in a grid that you want. You just go like top card is in like the 1/1 slot and then 1/2, 1/3, and then 2/1 and whatever. And then you can either take a column of 3 cards or a row of 3 cards and
or
then
a
the
row
next
of whatever's left.
Yeah, and then the next person does the same thing with whatever's left. And then with like I've kind of been developing it to play 3-player, where the third person just gets whatever's left over. And because it rotates every time, basically it balances out that I get a pick, you get a pick, and then he gets whatever's left. And like fucking last night, somebody got a free confiscate, a free bribery, and a free prophetic bolt.
Ew.
Like because we just didn't like the wow. people didn't pick those, and so the person just got free shit. Like
wow.
Free bribery is real. So yeah, so that was fun. Like grid drafting is like a way that you can for those people that don't know what it is or listening at home, it's really fun as a draft format for really 2 people. And like I said, I've been developing it to try to get it to work for 3, but that's what it's for. And it's especially good if you don't like the current versions of 2-player draft, which is like what, like Winston and Rochester or something.
Yeah.
Which I hate. I hate both of those.
Yeah.
Like, I don't actually know the difference between the 2. One I know is, like, with the piles, which I don't like.
Like, the 3 separate piles, and then you deal out 3 piles, and then you look at the first, either pick it or put it back.
Yeah.
And pick it, put it back.
Yeah.
So that's Winston. Winchester is where you deal out, is you have 4 piles, and then you make a pick. Where you pick one of the 4 piles and then you add 4 more cards. Like you add 4 cards.
Oh, okay. What's Winston?
Isn't that the one where you lay out the entire cube?
No,
that's Rotisserie.
That's Rotisserie. Sorry, Rotisserie. Yeah.
Rotisserie. Everyone go learn 2-player formats.
Yeah, so, really, go do that.
You can Rotisserie draft a pile, though, right? Like you can Rotisserie draft with a bunch of people.
Yeah, you could. Yep. But yeah, so
if you're like stranded on a desert
island. Yeah, I hate Rotisserie. I just, it's a good idea, but it's bad in practice, I find. It just takes fucking forever.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you could do an in-house Rotisserie quickly if you gave everybody all of the cards ahead of time so that they could kind of pre-plan and know kind of where they want to go. But it's kind of the same thing as like, if you don't do that, it's like the same as like drafting like the set for the first time at like a pre-release, where like every single card needs to be read every single time. And then somebody will pick 1 card and somebody else will draft that. So then the next guy now is spending like another 10 years on his pick.
Yeah, there's always that one guy who's like, well, hold on, he took my card, so now I got to rethink my entire plan.
And it's like, guy, have a backup.
So. Well, I had a backup, but then the other guy took it.
Yeah. Fucking other Jeremy.
Yeah. Fucking other. Jeremy.
So that's what I did. That was my long, drawn-out what I played. I'm sure you guys have just as interesting story.
Well, KYT played, or he did coverage for the Man Under 5 Super Series.
Yeah. I did not play. But I first want to tell my fans that I'm not going to be at, sadly, this is official, I will not be at Pro Tour Brussels.
Yeah.
Once again, due to a wedding.
Goddamn weddings keep getting in the way. Fucking hell.
But I did get the word from Premier Play that my invite is officially deferred to Pro Tour Vancouver. So, and that's actually not too far away.
They come quick, man.
Yeah, they come really quick. Like already we're
that's August.
Yeah. We're like less than a month away from Brussels, and then very quickly following that, Pro Tour Magic Origins. So I'm excited for that. Very sad that I won't be teaming up with Pascal and Dan. So that was like basically our three-man team for this one. It was going to be awesome to work with two Grand Prix champions and myself be like on the same team. But hopefully they qualify again, and maybe I'll have another opportunity to work with them. But this past weekend covered the MDSS.
What was the format?
Standard.
Nice.
And it was won by Blue Black Control.
Oh shit!
I just did a bunch of a feature match every round and the top eight. Didn't really look at the field, but like the top eight had one of almost like every deck was different in the top eight. Yeah, Blue Black. You had Abzan. You had Jeskai Tokens. You had Abzan Aggro. You had Sultai Control. Teamer Aggro, Mono Red, and Mardu Midrange. So you had like the whole metagame.
So, like, the top eight was actually like completely different. That's insane.
Wow.
It's really cool.
That's awesome, yeah. Actually. I'd love to see that in a tournament. That's like actually super cool.
It's fun because almost the exact same thing happened for the Managed Red Super Series here in Toronto a couple weeks back. It was Modern, and it was the same thing. It was seven different decks out of the top eight.
That's crazy.
Anyway, carry on.
And so I haven't been following the many iterations of Blue Black like Jay probably has. And so when the Blue Black player, like Dan Lantier, like fresh off winning GP Vancouver, is here to win an MDSS. And he had won the previous MDSS Montreal. I think it was also... I believe it was a 6K, I'm not sure, but this is another 6K, and he was in the finals and played against Blue Black, but he was surprised by a few card choices. Dan and I played Abzan mid-range at the PTQ I won at, but at some point, I guess, he felt the metagame had shifted, so he went back to Jeskai Tokens, and he was crushing the Swiss, lost only once to, I believe, Mono Red, but was able to make it to the finals. And obviously, based on player notoriety, was the heavy favorite to repeat in the finals. But he got surprised by a few cards from the Blue-Black Control deck. He got surprised by the Blue-Black player having one copy main deck of Drown in Sorrow, which is obviously really good against Jeskai Tokens. And he got surprised by Nullify, two copies of Nullify in the winner's deck. The winner does also had two Grind Clocks in their sideboard. So it's... It is a thing.
Back again. Look at that shit.
So my question is, like, how is it really that weird for it to play Nullify? I thought it wasn't that weird, but it definitely took Dan off guard and probably made him choose a poor line.
I guess it like depends what kind of player you are. Like, I don't know how Dan operates. I know he's good, but I don't know like what kind of like analyzer he is. So a lot of the times, like, it depends. If you're looking at cards saying like this isn't good because this happened down the road, or this isn't good because this has changed, sometimes it can get a little difficult because a lot of people will do the, like, it's hard to kind of figure out, but it's like the if this then that. So it's like, if this deck's in here, then play this, but that means that people, like, other people are gonna think that, so then you gotta like next level them by playing whatever kills that, right? So it's like the meta shifts, so, you know, people stop playing X, so then that means people are gonna play Y, which means instead of you playing Y or playing to beat Y, you play to beat, say, X and Z, because people are trying to beat Y because they know that the meta has shifted. So I don't think Nullify is, like, super weird. It's not super common either, though, I think. Like, I don't know if it would take me off guard as much, say, per se, but Like, one, I don't know, actually, like, I just don't know the answer to that. That's interesting. Like, I wouldn't play it. I don't play any copies of my 75.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
It was just like, I think it was game two, it was like, he tried to raise the alarm into some creature and was just like, totally surprised by Nullify.
Yeah.
And the Drownasaur was the random one of Drownasaur basically took over the game in game one. So, watching Jeskai Tokens, Dan like had as usual those powerful starts where you have an early ascendancy. But I wasn't that impressed with the deck overall. I felt like it's the same as it always was.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like it easily can get an early start and get you. But if it doesn't, it's nothing special. It's kind of like a lot of the same old, same old.
Right. Right. One of the most, like, the one feature match I was really bored with was, like, the Sultai Control Mirror. That was so fucking boring. Real bad. Like,
yep.
Dig Through Time, in response to Dig Through Time, I will dig through time myself to try to surf for the stroke. Okay, so I will dig through time on top of that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of that. No,
like,
and
some other guy two tables over is like, but I'm also going to dig
through time. Yeah, like, in response, I'll also dig through time.
You're not going to play this match.
Yeah. It's like, it's actually just like a troll. It's from, like, it's from the Unglued 3 set.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, Marrow just slipped it in, you know.
It's called, that one's called Dugger Through Time.
Yeah.
Because it just keeps
coming. If anyone plays Dig Through Time, you get a free copy on the spell, no matter if you're in that match or not.
So the match I watched, like, one player was really upset that he mulled a 5 and talked about it, but ultimately in that mirror, it doesn't really matter. The amount of cards don't really matter because you only have, like, a portion of your deck, like, in the mirror that really matter.
Yeah.
Like, if you just, like, if your extra cards are just, like, Seder Wayfinder or, like, there's, a bunch of cards that don't really matter in the matchup. So even if you mull to 5, you can easily come back. Like, if the other guy has, like, the extra Bile Blights or whatever in her hand, like, it doesn't matter. So that's why the guy who mulled to 5 still had a chance in the match. He ultimately lost, but he made it close. And the other thing that I was sort of impressed with was... Mono Red, but again, another one of those high variance decks. But I just saw some starts while covering it, just some starts that couldn't be beaten. Like, once you try to stabilize with a Courser, if the Mono Red player actually draws a Heel Cutter or has it, you're basically toast. So it was interesting to see it. And I got to see Collateral Damage for the first time in Constructed.
Wow.
This guy had it in his sideboard.
Love that card.
So making... Before. Well, it looked really good. It looked quite good. Sacrificing...
Goblin token.
Yeah. from Rabble Master or anything. It was very impressive. Or just a guy... Or if you had, like, if your hand had too many dash creatures and you wanted to sort of line up your turn so you could kill your opponent in a very mana-efficient way, that sometimes allowed you to do that before your opponent recovered. So it was very interesting. Like, Mono Red is very scary. I saw people have, like, Harness by Force in their sideboard, and in one feature match, saw it blow up an Abzan player when, you know, he attacked with Siege Rhino, tapped out for a Tasigur while being at 8, and my friend Joey Smith rips the 6 mountain off the top. He had Harness by Force in hand and just 5 lands in play, and basically all his creatures are dead from Drowning Sorrow. Rips the mountain, slams it, steals both creature, deals 8, and kills him out of nowhere.
Yeah. So
that card is pretty scary as well. So it's lots of interesting decks.
Everything you loved about Act of Treason and then some.
Right. Just quite powerful in against some of the strategies in the current meta. Not everything, but a very interesting sideboard tool because of the fact that as the opposing player, you tend to play around shit like Stoke the Flames, Lightning Strike. You're looking at trying to avoid being in the 3 damage, 4 damage, or like 6-7 damage zone. And then when you're like at 8, sometimes you feel really safe because you're like, oh man, he's gonna need double Stoke and he already played one. But then you can't play around Harness sometimes. That's like, it's just another card that just deals, attacks him from another angle and might deal them more than just six or seven damage. So the opponent was taken completely by surprise and just got killed in a very winnable game if you played it like super more conservatively. If you like really just played around just harness and instead of like running burn spells. So and we had 125 players, so it was basically the same amount that we got last time, roughly the amount of people we get here in PTQs. We're not as sadly not as crazy as Toronto numbers, so
that's crazy.
But it was a very good turnout for Montreal, and we're happy, and people enjoy themselves and love the prize structure. Well, because 125 people and 6K in prizes is actually a lot.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, I wish we got stuff like that here.
Well, how many people were at the MDSS in Edmonton? That was like a month and a half ago now. But Jeremy, did you hit that up?
Jeremy died.
Bob. There, Bob. All right, Jeremy's done. All
right, well, somebody quickly sent a message. Jeremy.
Yeah. No, Jeremy. I actually have been on mute because my kid was screaming, and I have been like throwing in comments from the peanut gallery and being ignored. So I did that whole, I've been on mute trying to talk to you guys and not actually having you hear me thing that everybody does
life. That's the worst when you're like on mute and you go to say something. But you don't.
And it's just like, why? Yeah. Normally they like they
would laugh
or something. Like, yeah, like yes. I thought it was on my. I was on fire.
Yeah.
We're just like,
no. Yeah. I was in San Jose for that weekend. I was at GP San Jose.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. So.
Well. Edmonton.
I missed out on it.
Edmonton does get the occasional MDSS. The MDSS series.
That was the first one, I think.
I think it was, yeah. But this year, we're hitting so many spots. It's awesome because, like, last year I ran the SOMS, the Southern Ontario Magic Society tournament series here in Ontario. And meanwhile, FACE was doing the MDSS. And then now that we're working together, it's just like, okay, we'll just do, like, 13 tournaments in Ontario and then, like, 13 more tournaments everywhere other than Ontario. And so it's like, it's awesome. I'm super stoked about it. And the first run has so far been great. So we had 162 players or something ridiculous in Toronto a couple weeks back. So
that's insane. That's awesome. Like, you're used to do like the crazy big PTQs. Are you doing something under like the Mana Deprived banner now for the crazy PTQs, or what's going on with that?
So, I mean, the Mana Deprived Super Series is really taking off as like, you know, people call it the SCG circuit of the North and stuff like that. But I mean, we're really getting some actual attendance, and I got to work on getting some real coverage going, you know, cause KYT does a great job in Montreal, but I can't fly them down here for every single Ontario event. So get some more coverage going and stuff like that and, really tune it. But yeah, we obviously don't get quite the numbers. Like when you have the letters PTQ in front of a tournament, like you have just like plus 100 players here in Ontario.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that we are able to get 160 for it was a 2.5, it was advertised as a 2.5K too. So it was like not even that big a deal. And just everyone wants to play Magic. So they showed up.
Well, and the other thing too is as soon as you say it's modern, people come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. Ontario and Toronto is like hooked on modern, man. It's so crazy. We do modern, like at the Toronto store, we do modern Wednesdays and Thursdays. We get like 40, 50 people on a Thursday night for modern sometimes. It's been nuts. So.
That's crazy. Holy fuck.
Yeah. Like you wonder why I'm so high on it. Like it is a geography thing, man. We are all insane for this shit.
All yep. Misguided souls.
Modern's great. Modern. Yeah, right now Alberta, well, at least Edmonton's going through a big modern kick. All of like the pre-TQs for this particular season is pretty much mono modern. It's pretty ridiculous.
Really? That's super rare. Did you guys see the numbers of the pre-TQ breakdown?
No.
Oh man, I saw this. Somebody posted it a while back. It was like 1,200 standard, 400 sealed, and 300 modern.
Altogether. Oh yeah, I did see that, and everyone was whining. There was like two sides. One was either like, see, modern's stupid, you should cancel it. And then the other side was like, how come nobody supports modern? I'm sad.
So yeah. As a store owner, let me tell other store owners out there that if your showcase is even like halfway respectable, run modern.
Yeah.
Because when we did our first pre-TQ as modern, and it was the best day for trades we've ever had in store, I think, just because when people show up with binders full of cards and they're modern players, their binder's just worth five times as much as if they're standard players. And they all want to switch up and they all want to get new cards and yada yada, right? So like, as from a store owner's point of view, modern is where it's at.
And all of a sudden you get these like strange runs and spikes on dumb cards that you would have like thought as a dollar, and all of a sudden you're like able to liquidate them for like 12. Like, it's silly, silly too.
Yeah, the Amulet Bloom deck blowing up was like amazing, right? Because everyone's like, hey, new deck. Yeah. And it wasn't a new deck. It was obviously an old deck, but an old deck that all of a sudden was tier one in everyone's eyes.
And try to find Sower of Temptations in Toronto.
Yeah, that's basically like the... I was going to say Silver Fox, but that's a different thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's just the Richard Gere. Yeah. Basically, Sower of Temptation is Richard Gere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gerbil Felching aside.
So, yeah, if you go back, we have 15 PPTQs for this season. Uh-huh. It's 3 sealed, 2 standard, 9 modern.
Wow.
That only adds up to 14, too. There's like 1 legacy?
Nope. Oh, they added it and it's sealed. They had the thing at the top, but the person's not to be announced anymore, so it was
okay.
Sealed.
So let me ask a question. From a card store owner's perspective, is sealed just more lucrative for you, like per player? Or, I mean, maybe it isn't, right? Like, any constructed format is probably just like all profit.
So, I mean, assuming that you're building your tournament structure and that like total entry fees collected minus product cost minus prizes equals zero, like that's how I always set it up and how most store owners that like plan on getting good attendance do, like that the tournament itself is not supposed to actually make any money. The tournament is just to fill your store with bodies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then sealed is the worst, because sealed is nobody needs cards for the sealed pool, right? Whereas if you run standard or even modern, like standard for sure, modern maybe, people show up without a deck. And they're like, yeah, yeah, so I've got 12 cards of the 75 I need. Here's my list. Help me. I need to start this tournament in 40 minutes. And you just obviously sell a bunch of cards, right?
Yeah.
Or they show up with a trade binder and that's just as good. And they say, I screw this old deck. I hate it now. Give me a new deck. Whereas sealed, I mean, sure, a bunch of people like crack their sealed pool and then turn around at the end of the day and they're like, I don't need any of these cards. Take them from me, which is obviously good. But it's, there's a reason Star City runs, Standard and Legacy as their sort of benchmarks for the SCG circuit, right? Because that's, constructed events move cards. And that's what we need as stores, is to be just moving cards in and out the door all the time.
Yeah.
There's a certain advantage also to just the time constraints that you need.
And that's the other thing, is sealed. If you're not doing like pre-reg pools for the whole group, then you're like adding almost an hour and a half by the time you get through like registering the pools, then passing the pools, then opening the pools, registering your sealed decks, getting your basic land, sleeving up. Like, by the time you've done all that, it's almost an hour and a half from a DO's perspective. And then when you get to the top eight, you have to draft and deck build again.
So why even run them? Like, why not just run them all constructed? Is there like, is it 100% up to you guys? Are you told to run a breakout? Like, what does that look like?
It's entirely up to store owners. Our next one, which is actually next weekend, Saturday the 28th is sealed. And the reason we're doing it as sealed is because you reach a different player base, right? There's people who will never come out for a constructed event ever and yet still want to hit the Pro Tour, right? So these players, like limited grinders, want an opportunity to play. And so you're sort of throwing a bone to them. And we're happy to do so once in a while. So we're doing our next one sealed. It's on release weekend too, so that really helps things of like, hey, it's a new format, and people who are serious about it are going to be much more interested. People who actually want to win the pre-TQ will be interested, because if they think they can solve a sealed format faster than every other Joban out there, they think they've got a leg up. And then there's going to be a whole bunch of people who show up just because they want to play sealed with a new format, right? And gotcha. Don't care about winning. They just want to play. So, yeah, it's good to diversify. Take care of your player base.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So, so the next MDSS is St. John's, if I'm not mistaken, right, KYT?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I know that. That's fucked up.
That's impressive. I'm proud of you.
At the Facebook page.
Nope, not even.
I am. Yeah,
oh, you are?
Oh. April is like the gauntlet of MDSS, because the first Saturday is St. John's, the second is Saskatoon, then Toronto, then North Bay. Believe it or not, we're going to North Bay for an MDSS.
Wow.
Yeah. It's so funny because everyone's like, where even is North Bay? I don't even know.
It's like so far away, so many hours. Is there
North
player
Bay
base
had
up
a PTQ.
There?
North Bay had a PTQ?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Is there a player base up there?
So the funny thing is there is a player base there. And the player base is so excited that we're coming to town. It's actually like the carnival showing up. Like they're losing their mind. And the other thing is that there's a player base around North Bay. And there's a bunch of people up in like
Sudbury and shit.
Sudbury, there was people who drove down from what the heck is wherever Shania Twain's from? Timmins. There's a bunch of people from Timmins who drove down for one of our Psalms events last year because they were like, we just want to play Magic, man.
Wow.
I want to play Magic. And so people are super excited. I had one store owner from a town that I'd never even heard of in Northern Ontario who was like, man, can I help advertise for this event in North Bay? Because it's like 3 hours less driving, and I want to like run an event to like help support it. I'm like, awesome.
Wow.
So I think it'll be like 60 players, but like the most excited 60 players you've ever met.
Nice. Well,
that's awesome.
I would love to be at the MDSS Toronto, but I also have a fucking wedding that weekend. I'm looking at it now. I'm like, God damn, these weddings.
The next Toronto one's April 18th.
Yeah.
Which is good because it's a week before the first RPTQ. Exactly a week before the first RPTQ. Mm-hmm. And exactly 2 weeks before GP Toronto. And all three of the events are standard. So people who are interested in RPTQ knowledge and standard for GP Toronto, like pay attention to the results from the April 18th MDSS in Toronto.
Yeah.
Because that'll give you some insight into what the new standard format really looks like.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, Kelly, it was always very counterintuitive how Matt was telling me how his favorite places in our previous years of doing MDSS was always Halifax and St. John's, places that...
Saskatoon's the other one.
Right, and places that like aren't known to be magic meccas like Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. And it's just that because there are communities there, and like any big event, it's not like us where we're just like, we have way too many PTQs and tournaments. For them, it's just that one thing that, you know, gets people really excited. And it was always counterintuitive to think about that those were, you know, Matt's favorite events on the schedule.
It's true because I'm from Winnipeg, right? And like, I know that sort of small town idea of like, there's something exciting happening, you know, and I definitely grew up with that of like, let's go out and see whatever exciting things come into town. So I assume that's what it's like. I've never taken a show on the road yet as a vendor, So I'm excited to go like run a tournament elsewhere in like small town Ontario. And like witness that firsthand. But that's what Schmalsey's always said, is it's like he loves just like seeing how ramped up and excited everybody gets about showing up somewhere random. So should be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Just blew my mind. I always like that they would be more happy with the higher attendance places, but that's not true. That's not always the case.
Yep. Well, and like people in small towns don't necessarily have like a card shop that's willing to pay money for cards, right? Like a lot of the stores in smaller towns can't really afford to like pay cash for Magic cards. Like they'll do aids, but they like don't offer the same rates or whatever. And I totally get that. Like
a lot of times too, like sometimes they just can't support like a healthy Magic environment. Not like that it's a bad not that it's like negative, but just like things like they don't have judges, right? Maybe they don't have more than, you know, 10 guys in the whole community or 20 guys in the whole community that can't commit to Friday Night Magics, right? And then so
maybe the physical stores only got room for like 12 or 16 people, like,
yeah,
right? Like
and it's a part-time like record store and random comic book. Not that I have any experience going to a store like that, but
Cramps.
That's never Saskatchewan. But you know what I mean? Like I've gone to lots of stores that are like that, where like, oh, like Magic store isn't a word that they have. It's almost like you're going into like a knickknack store instead that happens to sell like, yeah, Magic cards. And you know, maybe some people play Magic there, but they also play D&D there. And then somebody else likes comics there. And then somebody else fucking likes anime. And so it's just like a knick-knacky, and then like records, and like you could find a Nirvana fucking CD still in the package, and you know, like things like that, and you're like, oh, okay, well, like, and so when you go to these small towns and you run tournaments there, I think a lot of people get really excited because it's not something that they normally get to see, but also they don't like PTQs and stuff don't go there. Right?
Yeah.
Like, think of the plight of the Newfoundland players and the PEI players. Like, was it last year or 2 years ago? They were, like, super vocal on Twitter. Unfortunately, there was, like, 5 of them. But they were, like, really upset that they weren't getting PTQs because there just wasn't enough
players
to support that. So they took it away, and that's how it worked. Like, fuck, when that happened in Alberta, all of the rednecks here went fucking crazy. And it was like, oh, we only get one PTQ, or we only get 2 PTQs instead of 30. And the people in the islands and the old Maritimes out east, they were getting none PTQs, right? So I think that's a big thing, and I think it's really cool that face to face is going to those places. You know?
Can you just stroke our ego just a little harder while you're at it, like?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about this earlier when you came on, when we were going to introduce you. I was going to be like, fuck you, because you are a fucking asshole. That's why, Kelly. But also, who do you think you are, and what gives you the right to have awesome stores out there? Like, I really like the store I go to here, but like, it just looks like fucking garbage comparatively. Like, we don't have cafes with sweet food. Even the store here that has a cafe is, like, it's not a cafe. It's, like, the Neckbeard Deli.
They're angry with you, Kelly, because you have to understand, you make all of their stores look terrible.
Yeah, bitch. And then...
Well, my store is opening up a cafe, tweet things so like, fuck you guys.
You tweet things won't like, have Tony. Playing, still gonna suck.
You tweet things like, we're playing Werewolf, and there's, like, 58 people here. Oh, good. And then also, oh, $18 sealed. Fuck you. So yeah,
it was actually super awkward for us because like
was it? Oh,
in Toronto, like we kept posting pictures of the food and stuff, and then on Twitter we were like, oh man, the Montreal face-to-face game sucks, they better step up their game.
And it was like,
oh man, that's not, you know, the Montreal sucks cool too.
It's to the point where Schmaltz was talking to me about like hiring someone to run the cafe a little cafe thing that they have at the Montreal store.
And they should send them down to Toronto for a week of training with Tony.
Yeah. So we're joking about this right now, but that's actually exactly what they've done. They've like put this new lady they've hired in touch with Tony, and they're like learn his secrets. How is it done? So there might be big changes coming in the Montreal store. I don't know. Maybe I should shut my mouth.
I'm just telling you, like, Tony is one of the most down-to-earth and amazing people, period. And when you put that sort of, like, pride in their work, you know, combine it with a desire to please the customer, you know, and wrap it all up in this tidy little bow of, I give a shit if you enjoy your experience.
Yep.
Like, there is no better single person that you could have in charge of that aspect of your business. Like, yep. He just does not exist.
I know. He's the man.
Yeah. So it's really sweet. Like, honestly, look, the rare occasions I get to go out to Friday Night Magic, like, and they are rare, right? I mean, life is what it is. I have a plethora of stores that I could go to that are well within a 35, 40 minute drive for me. And I will go out of my way to drive the extra hour. Like, I will drive an hour and a half through traffic to get to F&M to play at Face to Face Games Toronto. Like,
now, everyone should know this is like Toronto traffic we're talking. So it's really like an extra like 3 blocks further than other stores.
Hold on. Time out. I live in the middle of nowhere. Okay. Like, I live in Bradford, Ontario. Like, this is north, right? I'm south of Barrie, but just, okay. And okay. Just for me to get to Legends Warehouse. Okay. Which is on 400 in Bond, right?
Legends.
Okay.
Legends is awesome.
They do great. For me to get there, it is a 35 minute drive. Okay.
Yep.
Put that into perspective. How much further away from Legends Warehouse do you guys think you are?
During Friday 6 p.m. traffic?
Correct.
Like 90 minutes.
At best. Like, yeah. No, it is a haul. It is a haul. But I mean, that's where I go.
Basically, Jay and Jeremy could go to F&M Saskatchewan easier than you can come to F&M at Face-to-Face trial.
Yeah, if I leave you the wrong time, you're probably right.
Yeah.
I love the way that you would, like, phrase that question to him, Scotty. It's like, how much further do you think you are? Like, you were setting him up to fail. Like, you were getting it. Whatever he said, you were going to tell him he was wrong.
Well, I took the number I thought it was and then doubled it. Yeah. I was like 45 minutes. Wait, no, I should play it safe and double it.
Yeah, draft. So,
hey, are we still telling magic stories? Because
yeah.
Actually played Magic for the first time in several months.
Shut the front door.
Yeah. No, on Friday, it was Friday the 13th, so we did a throwback Innistrad draft because that's...
Yeah, again! 13th. Fuck you! That's horseshit.
It was
God
super
damn
sweet.
It, Calgary.
Wait. You ready? You ready for this? Kelly, how much do you charge privilege?
I don't care.
It's not cheap. Innistrad draft's the real deal, but it was $30, but it was worth every penny, man. I love that format. And I'll keep this short because there really wasn't much to tell. I was sitting at a table of 7 other people who didn't understand how good travel preparation is. So, and I knew that sitting down, I was like, I can basically just force green white travel prep because nobody else understands how
is
good
that the one that's like put counters on your guys.
Yeah,
flash like, back, put more counters on your guys.
Oh my god, yeah, that card is the hyper.
Yeah, so I wound up with 3 travel preps and 2 pieces of equipment and a bunch of dumb idiots and didn't drop a game, but I it was so much fun. I love that format.
Anybody open any crazy money? Were there any Lilianas open in that draft?
0.
Guys to St. Drafts?
0.
Wow.
Snapcaster Mage, 0. Oh, wow. So that means everyone come buy the remaining boosters in that box because they're probably sweet.
Yeah, see, that's absolutely. How you guys feel because in Edmonton, if that would happen, like that box would have been gone in like a second. We get degenerate. We'll open up a box of Alliance and like one guy will buy a pack. and then everyone else starts buying packs because their chances are going up at getting a Force of Will, and we'll like just start getting like right degenerate. Like if one person buys one pack of alliances, the entire box goes.
So I introduced the next level credit card. So okay.
Oh, next level, nice.
So we had a sales meeting, right? Which is normal for us on a Monday. But we decided we had a new hire. So we're like, you know what, guys? Let's take the new hire out and let's go out and actually have like a sales lunch. And we'll leave the sales manager at the office because, you know, fuck him, he's cheap. And we'll come out and we'll just like do it ourselves, right? So we're like, so we took the guy out and we're like, oh, okay. Well, plus we'd been in a meeting with him for like 3 hours. We were done. So we take this new guy out and we go to St. Louis, right? Same place where we had the Mana Deprived, the legendary Mana Deprived party. Yeah, because it's like right around the corner from my office. So we go and we sit, we have lunch, whatever. And then as we're like fishing around for the bill, I introduced the next level credit card game. And it was super epic.
What is next level?
Oh, okay. So level one credit card game is if you are in, you put your credit card in the center. If you're out, okay, then you pay for your bill and you put the cash in the center. And so every time the waitress comes to the table, she takes a card away until there's only two left. And then she picks the one that pays the last time.
Yep.
Okay. And the first level of the credit card game is whoever pays the bill takes the cash and puts it in their pocket. You know, if anyone bails out, they take the cash and because they use it to pay the bill. But the next level credit card game says the last person who was with the guy, like the last two, whoever gets picked pays the bill, and whoever doesn't get picked gets all the cash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You tried to play that in Calgary.
I did, yeah.
Which I was fine playing with because it was my bachelor party and I wasn't paying anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Tegan got fucking hosed.
Yeah, he got hosed. but it wasn't next level. It was just level one, so he got all the money.
Yeah.
So we played next level at the table, and it was good. It was fun. I didn't pay, so that's cool. But it means that, see, the thing about this is once you start doing the credit card game with a group of people,
it's a slippery slope.
They insist on continuing to do it because you have to try to make your money back. So if you're the guy that got stuck, then you're like, hey, guys, let's go for lunch. Hey, guys, let's go for lunch. Hey, guys, let's go for lunch. Because you need to make good on all the money you spent. And you figure, no, there's no way I'm getting screwed again.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Just ask Daniel Fournier about losing the credit card game 7 times in a row.
Oh, God.
Or Tom Martell.
Yeah. Wow, he made the top four of those, too.
Zing!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Top Fournier. Well,
pre-release? Who's pre-releasing?
KYT?
Probably doing the typical degenerate fucking midnight stupid shit that I always do in regret.
You're too old. You're too old for that now. You're 30. You can't do midnight pre-releases anymore. Go have a night with your beautiful girlfriend and make sure she doesn't feel bad that you're going to be gone all day Monday doing a triple flight. That's how you are all day Saturday doing a triple flight. That's how you should do this.
But you get to open packs like 8 hours sooner if you do the midnight.
Doesn't even matter.
It's time you can't get back, man.
Yeah, you're right. I'd rather be sleeping.
That's right.
I'm running the midnight and then like napping on the couch in the store for 2.5 hours and then getting up and making pancakes for the morning flight.
Yeah. So, well, I'll be there for 9.
Come on, Jay. You can't insult him for that. He makes his guys fucking pancakes.
I'm over it. What a fuck.
Let's be real here.
So let's
not giving these pancakes away.
No, but they're thick, fluffy, delicious pancakes with whipped cream. And last time it was fresh blueberry compote. Fucking
vending machine.
Yeah.
Vending machine represent.
When we had our last PTQ, I told everyone that the extra P in the PPTQ was for pancakes and pulled pork. Because that's what we do. That's how we roll.
Yep. And the Red Bull lemonades are a legend. Wait for it. Wait for it. Dairy.
No. Are they actually dairy?
They are. They're not.
No dairy in the lemonade.
Legend, no dairy.
Yeah, there's no dairy. No dairy.
Yeah.
But they are legendary.
They are very good. But yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there all day Saturday. I'll be there from like morning until you decide to kick me out.
All right. That'll be like... late.
Yep. As expected.
Who are you? Who are you two-headed gianting with at 6 p.m.? Do you know?
I don't know yet.
Oh, well, maybe that should be one of the prizes for the midnight pre-release, is that one of the lucky 3-0s gets to play with Scotty Mac.
If they want to.
If they dare to.
No, force them. Force it.
Yeah, like in order to get your prize packs, you have to compete.
Well, I mean, you can give it away as like a free entry. Like, it is a prize.
So get this. So Legacy, we've been doing Legacy FNM since we opened, okay? And to like help us through the winter lull, in January we started this thing where we said over the 8 Fridays in January and February, we would give away at least one of each dual land, like revised dual land.
Yeah, I saw that.
For Legacy FNM, which is like, hey, everyone, drag your ass out of bed in the freezing cold and come play Magic. So now we've gone through all, we gave away the Underground Sea and the everything. And I'm like, man, what do we give away now? So we did Wasteland 1 week, we did Force of Will the next week. But this Friday, I want to give away a revised starter deck that we picked up, which is like worth $300.
What?
Right? Yeah.
Like, I never, ever want to hear about this. And also, I never want to hear a Toronto player complain about Magic ever.
Too bad. Too bad. Toronto players will never stop complaining.
They complain the loudest, actually.
Yes, I know.
And almost now, as loud as East Coast.
Now they have nothing. I will never, ever feel bad for them, ever.
So, but the stipulation with the revised starter deck is if you win the revised starter deck, you are allowed to use it, add it to your sealed pool for midnight pre-release. If you stay for midnight pre-release, you get to add the revised starter deck.
Wow.
Man, that sounds awesome.
You'll probably use zero of the cards because Revised was like the worst set ever. Unless you open Lightning Bolt or Soldier of Plowshares, you're basically just...
Yeah, imagine that. Like, just like...
Fucking Counterspell. Suck it.
Yeah, Counterspell. What else? Maybe Dark Ritual?
Spell Blast. Power.
Would you use Spell Blast? Spell Blast doesn't...
No, but what was the other one, though? The Leak? Wasn't, God, what was it?
Power Leak.
Power Leak. It's Power
Drain,
Leak.
It was Drain Power. That's what it was called.
Where no, Power like... Leak. Drain Power is another one. That was like red enchant.
Are you thinking Power Sink?
Power Sink. Yeah, sorry. Power Sink. It's like power Leak is the enchantment one. Yeah.
There's also just like random good cards for sealed, like fucking Air Elemental.
Yep. Sarah.
And Anime Sarah. Dead. Oh. Oh, nice Atarka, bitch.
Terror, you're Atarka, Animate Dead.
In the same turn. In the same.
But he's not even going to play any of his, like, new packs. Just mono.
Or fucking vibe. Play, like, Mardu Aggro Armageddon. Boom.
Balance, bitch. Suck it.
My God. This is a terrible idea.
Hold on. Dave. There's like Bronze Tablet and shit in Revised, so we can turn pre-release into Anti-League. We can,
wow.
Like, yeah.
The best. Oh yeah. My God. Fucking Brain Geyser? Jesus.
So Channel. Many cards.
Channel is an uncommon.
Oh, God.
Or even just like, how mad would you be? You just randomly, they play like, oh, Circle Protection Red. Like, what the fuck? Fucking Contract from Below.
Yeah.
Contract from Below.
Demonic there Tutor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Control Magic. Yeah, great idea, Kelly. I might fly out.
You know, it's three rares in the starter, probably going to be like three laces.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like a mega tilt.
Yeah, or like Dancing Scimitar as your rare.
Yep. Yeah. It's going to be like Pearl Ace, Dancing Scimitar, and freaking Sedge Troll or some shit.
Yeah. Demonic Horde.
Yeah, that card's good.
Oh, that card's sweet. You can blow people's lands with Demonic Horde.
It's like, still a 5-5. Like, oh,
fucking Dingus Egg.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've got the best Dingus Egg story. So, 401 Games, local Toronto game store, shout out to 401. They had a beta booster pack in their showcase once upon a time. And, like, everyone who knows, like, old packs knows that in theory they could be searched, right? Because the old packs were made with a wrapper where if you tried really hard, you could, like, see through the wrapper and see what the names of the cards were. But anyway, they had this booster pack. It was, like, years ago, so beta booster pack was, like, $400. and they're drafting on like a Saturday afternoon. This guy in a suit just randomly walks in. He's like, "Oh, a beta booster pack. I haven't opened one of those in forever." So he's like, "I'll buy it."
It sounds like a Mr. Burns.
Basically Mr. Burns walks in and buys a beta booster pack. And was like, "Oh man, what are you gonna do?" And he's like, "I'm gonna open it, obviously."
Idiot.
Yeah, duh. And so everyone's like,
oh. "Duh."
There's like this crowd forms around Mr. Burns. And everyone's like, "Oh my god, what's it gonna be? What's it gonna be?" And he like cracks the pack and he like flips to the rare. He's like, "Oh sweet, Dingus Egg. I need that for my land destruction deck."
Oh my god, really?
And everyone's like, "You just bought a $400 Dingus Egg." And he's like, "Yeah, but I need it for my land destruction deck."
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck.
And then he left. Then he left. It was over.
Oh man. What a fucking ding.
Yikes. So Jay and Jerry, you guys playing pre-releases probably?
No, I gotta work.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it was like already this
so
weekend.
Soon, right?
Yeah, like this. Yeah. So, I actually don't know if I am. I feel like I have plans this weekend because I wasn't ready for that shit. So
there's like 800 dragons in the set. You do not want to miss that.
That's true.
There is not 800 dragons because if there were, Jay would have suffered greatly.
Jay would have suffered. We would have had to watch the video of him fucking himself in his own ass.
Hey, you wouldn't have had to watch it.
No, yeah, we would have. So if you guys would pre-release, like I know where I'm going. What pack would you pick? Which clan? Which two color allied combination would you pick?
So, what's the format? Is it four of the new set again and two of the others?
We don't know.
There's one seed pack.
Yes.
Hold on, I can tell you. Because I think there was actually... I think Gavin did an article about that today?
I have a feeling it's a seeded pack, four packs of dragons, and one pack of fate.
Yes.
That sounds reasonable.
That sounds right.
Sorry... You said three one-seeded?
No, four. Four one-seeded and one fate.
Yeah. Just a splash of fate in there. Okay. Just right. A peppering. A peppering of fate reports.
Yeah, wait, there it is. Yeah, you're right. Four one-on-one. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so which would you pick?
And then it's now two-color clans?
Correct.
Yep.
Holy fuck, I don't know.
The clans ditched the whole piece of the wedge. And they're like, "Screw the wedges.
Wedge out.
Wedges?
Baby.
Wedges? We don't need no stinking wedges.
I don't know,
wedges.
Like green white?
Would you play green white? Dromoka?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
You have a one drop that can block fucking dragons all day. Boom.
And Dromoka's command is pretty freaking sweet. You get on there and you get like, I don't know. You get this. Second.
And like Anafenza is like a bonkers card.
Except that you'll not. Oh, you mean the new one? Yeah.
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 Right, like that's a crazy card. The Erishin Foremost is a crazy card that you could get. Yeah, I don't know. There's like lots of bolster cards in these two colors. So that seems annoying.
Explosive vegetation in this set.
Yeah.
First time here. Yeah. Jesus Christ. That's amazing.
Yeah, first time it's been in standard in a long time.
Man.
And it is not clan specific.
Nope.
Yeah, it's not clan specific.
Yo.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe that. The blue-white looks good too. I don't really know. I'm not sure. Somebody else answer the question.
Let me tell you, from pre-registrations, I'll tell you that the most popular is blue-white by far.
Probably because of Narset, right?
Well, everyone thinks they're going to open Narset, but they're not, because she's not going to be a promo.
Do you know what the promos are?
No, but they're not going to put her Planeswalker as a
promo. No,
that's true.
That
would be brutal.
They're just, like, hoping and praying on their horseshoe up their butt that they're going to open one and then be able to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is also a very powerful Daggeron, and... The colors look good.
There's a lot of really good powerful Daggerons in those colors too. Like even if you just open them, right? Like
right, like the uncommon one, this guy who's like a blue, a white, and four.
The Frost Titan?
No.
The Cunning Breeze Dancer.
The double prowess guy.
Oh yeah.
White with double prowess. Like that seems like it could get out of hand pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think it could be fairly good.
Yeah, and like I don't know how good Skywise teaching is, but getting a 2/2 flyer for two seems very powerful.
Also, you could get Beltol Dragon, and Beltol Dragon is the art on the playmat for Grand Prix Toronto in May. So
really?
It's good. Must be good. It's on playmat.
That's true.
Yep. It's pretty much how science and math work.
Yeah, and like I don't know, blue white has like a lot of like it feels like the prowess deck from the other formats. Like it has a lot of like tricks and little guys that do stuff and
Yeah, I agree. I'm a
mythic clone. Why is Clone Legion 8 mana and just makes a bunch of clones?
Cuz it's bad.
Yeah.
I didn't even read the card and I knew what it did.
Yes.
It's like, oh, Clone Legion. Yeah, okay, it makes a copy of everything. I got it. All right, cool, thanks. Bye.
It doesn't even make a copy of everything. It only makes a copy of your opponent's stuff. That's well, even worse.
I tell you, I am certainly looking forward to jamming Atarka all day.
Yeah.
All day. Red-green dragon beatdowns, I'm in.
So when we do, like, deck construction sealed at our store, we like organize people by clan and everyone from the same clan sits at the same tables just for like ease of organizing things. So it Atarka is basically going to be like Scotty sitting with all the 13-year-olds that play at our store.
That sounds up, right?
They're like, yeah, red green dragon, woo.
Yeah. Oh. I'm actually really excited. Like they've got some really sweet cards. I like Roast, the flavor text, although it's not clan identified, the flavor text on it is, of course, Temur in nature or Atarka in nature, so that's pretty exciting.
Is Roast really that good? Everyone's talking about Roast.
Dude,
Roast is good.
Okay, Roast. Okay, so like I'll talk when we get to after we get through this, we can talk about New Standard because I've been playing a pile of it and we can have a talk about Roast.
Really?
Yeah.
What's Tassigar's toughness? What's Siege Rhino's toughness? Conversations.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay. But it's sorcery speed.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's a way for red to kill something bigger than three.
It's 2 mana, and it kills fucking all of the cards that matter.
Sure.
It's so dumb. Yeah, it's so dumb. No longer are you worried about Lightning Strike or Wild Slash or Stoke Flames. Nope. Just Roast. Just Roast.
For those who don't know, Roast is red and one sorcery, deal 5 damage to target creature without flying. So target non-important dragon.
I'm telling you, in standard, it is going to have such a huge impact on the way that people build their decks that it's going to be so important.
So let's see what Roast is pre-selling on Face-to-Face Games Toronto for, or facefacegames.com. What do you guys think it should be?
It's a 75. If I'm not mistaken.
It is indeed 75 cents, and we have no foils in stock.
Correct.
So what should it be? Is it a 75 cent uncommon, or is it going to be worth more? Is it going to be the next Valor stands of this set?
Every single deck that contains red that has come out in terms of deck construction is playing 3 to 4 copies of Roast in the main deck.
So how crazy should I tell Schmaltzy he is, and what should I tell him?
I mean, they should be at least a dollar. At this point, at least a dollar.
$2?
I would do. But you could probably do $2.50. You could probably do $1.50 as you get close. But
let's see what Valorous Stance is at these days. No, I don't want foil. I just want.
I don't think it's Valorous Stance.
I don't think it's Valorous Stance, but it's still very good.
Because Valorous Stance was like one of those like, oh, it's a dollar, and then it was like, hey, where'd all of Valorous Stances go?
Oh my god, they're $4? What are we even doing here?
Yeah, we're sold out at $2.50 spreads.
Yeah, so
I'm pretty sure Valorous Stance doesn't actually exist as a card, because I haven't seen one in like a month and a half. Same with Wild Slack.
I bought 4 foil wins. I feel so pretty.
Yeah, I know you did. You messaged me. You're like, hey, you got 4 foil Valor stands for me, don't you? And I was like, that's the best joke I've heard all week.
but yeah, I'm really excited to just like bash face. Like, there's so many of these sweet cards in these colors, and even if I'm just opening up cards, you can splash into white if you need to. If you open up some sweet abs and bombs, you can splash into, you know, yep, Jeskai if you get some teamer bombs. You know, I'm really happy to be sort of straddling in that area. And there's some good cards in Fate Reforged too that you can pick up, like Bathen Dragonfire, and some of the dragons are really good out of that set too. So I'm really happy to be there. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yep.
Mind Rod is back. Oh god.
Yeah, there's a bunch of funky. I mean, we get Duress again. We get. Do you guys think these monuments? Has anyone had a look
at
these three colors?
Straight up, no.
I'm like super upset that they just like shit the bed on them and just made them all the exact same with no even abilities. Like, that's fucking lazy.
So it's...
They couldn't even make them like the clue stones or whatever they were from Ravnica or the manlands or whatever, the man artifacts.
But you wanted them to all be different dragons, like,
yeah, like, I think that's fine. You're paying 6 fucking mana for them.
Yeah.
I think until should... end of turn. I feel like if they didn't, if it was like 6 mana, now it's permanently a 4/4 flying dragon.
Yeah,
I'd be okay with that. But it's like, nope, you got to pay that again next turn.
Yeah, like you time walk your turn so that you can have a generic like vanilla dragon. That just seems so lazy to me. They didn't even fucking try to make them flavorful.
Huh.
Yep. Nope. Okay, so hypothetical of the night. Battle for Zendikar, full art basics or no?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. That's like the only reason.
Please, yes. Please.
Now, okay, so we're all in agreement, full art basics?
Yep.
Now, will they again do Priceless Treasures?
Probably not.
For that?
Doubtful.
That was where...
I don't think so.
That's super doubtful.
First printing of Zendikar had, like, weird, you know, beta and alpha cards they bought back and shoved into random boosters.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so that was, those, like, their vault. Like, they cleaned out their vault.
For those of you that don't know, yeah, like, if you started recently... Yeah, they have like these
super rare. It was one 2,000 packs.
But they did that to make sure that it would sell out. Like, I get that they had a reason to do it thematically.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, was that the reason? Because Magic was different back in Zendikar. Like, that was like a turning point almost. But like,
that's part of it. Because even like it sold so much because A, fetch lands, right? And yep. B, these eternal pieces. There were people who normally would buy one box. Bought a case.
Yep, absolutely.
Like it was redonkulous the amount of Magic that was opened, and it was certainly a resurgence. Like there were people that came back to the game for that.
Yep, and it was also just a really exciting, interesting set too. Like people liked it, regardless of fetch lands and the chance you'll open an Ancestral Recall or a beta Black Lotus. Like my buddy in Winnipeg, beta Black Lotus out of a pack of Zendikar.
That's
you open it in a draft. There's like all these pictures on Facebook of him and like the whole draft, like dancing around. All the other 7 people around him don't even care. They're just so happy that it happened that they're like, "Yeah, look, we're part of this moment in history."
Yeah, that's bonkers.
The set was good. Zendikar was the bomb. I just bought a box of Zendikar for the store. We saved 24 packs for draft, don't worry.
Nice.
That may or may not be the plan for my bachelor party.
Oh. Zendikar draft, sweet.
You'll have to talk to Tony about it.
Yeah. Will do. But yeah, so Fetchlands, you think those are coming back?
Yeah.
It's like weird. It's one of those things where you're like, well, like you should probably expect it, but then is it like too obvious?
I don't know. Between it and Modern Masters 2, like I can't see getting through the summer without them being recorded.
There's no fetch lands in Modern Masters 2.
No?
No, not at all. No.
They said
guaranteed
that.
No.
No, they didn't say that, but that would be dumb. The first Modern Masters, I think, hit the nail on the head where the only lands they printed in the set were lands that can make all colors. Like, they did the Vivids and they did City of Brass.
Okay.
Well, this time they're doing the colorless lands. They're doing Tron lands.
Yeah, probably Tron lands, but there'll probably be some other cycle of, like, stupid, uncommon lands that nobody cares about. And then I think everyone's like, oh, they're going to put the filter lands in. There's no way they're jamming 10 filter lands. There's no way they're wasting 10 rare slots.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see the filter lands in, like, whatever Commander 2015 product there is.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see them doing the fast lands if they really wanted to do that. But aren't the fast lands were Scars, and they're not printing that far. Wait, they are printing Scars here, aren't they?
No, they're not. Up to Zendikar. Zendikar, Roosevelt, Drazi, and that's it.
Okay.
So we missed Scars. I don't think they need the fast lands that bad anyway. Like, what, the most expensive one is black-red at, like, $7? Like, doesn't...
Really?
Yeah, that's the most expensive one.
It's not even, like, the blue-white one?
No, definitely not. Because
Fastland, the only deck that cares about Fastlands
is Jund.
Freaking aggro decks and Jund and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
Yeah. No, those don't need a reprint nearly as bad as, like, a bajillion other things they could print. Okay, if we're talking Modern Masters 2 specs, I think they'll do, like, obviously the Tron lands, and then a bunch of random other lands that need printing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see a bunch of the Kamigawa block. Like, I'm a land that does something weird.
Like, what about, like, Horizon Canopy?
Yeah, I was going to say, what about the Future Sight lands? Would they just print all those?
No, I don't think so. Because they can't just print one or two of them. Like, the two that need a reprint are Horizon Canopy and...
Grove.
And Grove of the Burn Willows.
Yeah.
But then what, they're going to print, like, Maze of Nimbus or Nimbus Maze or whatever it's called? Like, nobody cares about that.
Yeah, Nimbus Maze.
It's a weird card, and it's not played in anything. It's weird.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, what, are they going to put it in a futuristic frame? Like, no. No.
Put it in a standard frame. That'll blow their minds.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not happening. Because then they have to reprint Graven Cairns, because that was the red-black one. Graven Cairns, and that's a filter land that they already reprinted. But then if they print Graven Cairns, then they've got to print the other 9. And that's not happening.
They don't have to.
What, they're going to print a cycle of 4? They're going to print...
That, like, would be weird, but they could do that.
Hey, did they reprint all the commands when they reprinted Cryptic Command?
Oh, yeah.
I came at you armed. I was prepared.
He was like, he just pulled up the Modern Master spoiler and then just fucking went to town on that thing. And yeah, was like, I got one for you now, Kelly.
I guess they didn't print all the packs either.
No. Nope.
Yeah, so maybe they'll do some. Maybe they'll lose. But lands seem weird to just print some.
I agree with you. Anything, it would be filter lands. If anything, it's filter lands.
But it's not going to be filter lands because it's too color specific. And I don't think they want Modern Masters 2 to be. I think they want, like, crazy, like, oh, one draft you're playing blue white, and then the next you're playing, like, blue red. Like, whoa!
Like, red! Fuck!
I wouldn't mind, like, Gemstone Caverns.
Yeah.
I could see Gemstone Cavern. I could see Gemstone Mine. I could see both Cavern and Mine.
Gotta love the gems.
Go well with their, like, important lands that are not color specific.
Well, I mean, was Rupture Spire done? Because you could do that. Reflecting Pool is up for. Is up for
Reflecting Pool was in Commander. Or not in Commander Conspiracy.
Yeah. That's right. They don't really need to do Reflecting Pool, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did it just for the health of the limited format.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, we didn't ask KYT what he's going to play at his pre release. That just dawns on me right now.
Probably blue. Fell asleep. Oh no, he's awake.
We're actually not surprised by that. Blue white.
If I was going to be playing, I'd be playing blue black. Really easy.
All right.
I want to get a Sword of Temptations with that touch.
The Taste Planeswalkers.
Yeah, or Sidisi, because tutor effects have always been fair.
That's really good too, actually. Yeah, Atarka is really, really good. It's really good. The first time you cast Atarka in Standard or put it into play and kill two Planeswalkers, you're going to feel real good about yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
But is 8/8 Flying Trample really, like, good enough stats?
No, yep. It probably needs to be better. It
absolutely is. Absolutely is. Because that's like two swings and you're dead.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty good. But
and because you already dealt them 4 damage because you're not terrible. And then you're going to swing twice more and kill them.
Yeah. 3 blockers. Get fucked. But yeah, it's a pretty sweet card. Tark is a really sweet card. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Been playing a bunch of New Standard and played a bunch of it this weekend and ended up trying out. I wanted to give Sarkhan a fair run. Like I thought it'd be all right. I thought it'd be cute. And then both Owen and Kibler both were like, this card's ridiculous. And so I 100% expect Kibler to say this card's ridiculous because it's a team of Planeswalker that isn't instantly terrible. It makes dragons. So that's fine. And then when Owen was like, I think this card's insane, and I'm going to build a deck with it, I thought, okay, well, if Owen also likes it, then there's got to be something to it, because Owen is not known for playing, like, terrible cards, right? So I built his deck that he put up a list on Channel Fireball. I built Owen's deck. I built Kibler's deck. Tweaked them both a little, because I felt like some of the numbers were a little strange. I just wanted to try a few other cards. And I settled on this teamer build, which basically didn't lose a match against anybody I played against.
Okay. That seems pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's decidedly mid-range. But, like, Roast is so good. Like, it is such an impact. So Kibler's deck had 2 copies of Polychronos in the main deck. Okay? And I was just, I had four copies of Roast, and I'm roasting everything. They're like, oh, Rabble Master on 3 or whatever. I'm like, sweet, roast it. And then like, sweet, Brimaz. I'm like, sweet, roast it. I'm like, oh, Siege Rhino. Sweet, roast it. Like, it's so versatile, this card. And you know what? If you don't want it against blue-black, sweet. You side out 4 roasts and you bring in 4 fucking counterspells. Like, it was just, it naturally lended itself to, like, to good sideboarding use, right? But more importantly, my Polychronos kept getting roasted. So I was like, well, I guess that's the next level. And so I started to play, instead of them, I played 2 copies of the new Red Regent, right? Which is the one that, like, whenever somebody targets one of your dragons, it lightning bolts them.
Oh, yeah.
And because, like, I'm already playing Sarkhan for dragons, and I'm playing some Atarkas, and I'm playing some Stormbreaths, you know? And, just wow. Like, having all of your threats go over their ground guys and not be roasted is super relevant. So I think you're going to find, like, mono red is instantly going to be one of the most played decks. There's a lot of amazing mono red cards that are being played or that are coming into the set. So mono red's going to be, like, a really big deck out of the gate. Aggressive ones always are at the start of new formats. And they're going to be playing roast as well, because of the sheer, like, value return that it has. So I think you want to next level your opponent and just play all flyers and beat them in the face.
You're crazy. You're my kind of crazy.
Right? Like, it's just, Roast is going to have that much an effect on the format. Like, it kills everything. I'm like, sweet. So you've got your dumb little death dealer. Oh, you leave 2 mana up? Okay. You know what I mean? Like, roast, you know, pump roast. Like, it's just, it's really, really, really sweet. And, you know, kills Lion, kills Rhino, kills Brimaz, kills Whisperwood Elemental, kills Polychronos, kills Courser. Very, very important, especially for the red decks, that it's just like 2 mana kill your Courser, then attack you with all of my haste guys. Like, it's just, ugh. Card's so, so crazy. So crazy, that roast. But yeah, there are a lot of board states that I was able to manufacture where Sarkhan just, like, hits the table with 2 other creatures on the board and makes a dragon, and you just sit there, and then your opponent can't do anything, right? You then untap, and you've got counter magic or removal or whatever, and you just draw a card, make a dragon, draw a card, make a dragon. Like, there's been a lot of times where I was just like, I was playing three Sarkhans, so I just like play a Sarkhan, make a guy, untap, make a guy, play another, like kills that Sarkhan, play another Sarkhan, make a guy. I'm like, it's fucking three dragons, biatch. So, yeah, it was pretty good.
Now, pretty good.
Yeah, now what? Yeah, and I was drawing a lot of cards, and I mean, it could have been the sideboard too. Like, playing lots of copies of Anger of the Gods, I think is going to be where you want to be in New Standard as well, just to kind of like combat all of these dumb things. Like, Abzan Aggro is a very powerful deck also, and Anger of the Gods is a card that's been criminally underplayed lately, and I think that it's definitely time to bring it back, because it stops not only Mono Red, but also does a pretty good job against Abzan Aggro, and you can basically build your deck post-board that it doesn't do anything to you in Temur, because you're still playing, like, Savage Knuckleblades and X4 Dragons. So, it's pretty good against Jeskai Tokens, it's good against Red-White, like, Anger of the Gods is where it's at. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm almost certainly going to start with Temur out of the gate, just because I feel like it's got all the tools it needs right out of the initial. And you've got access to, like, Infinity Counter Magic, if you need it. So you can, like, stuff your opponent. And Atarka kills Planeswalkers. Oh my god, that card's so dumb. Oh, so dumb. But anyways, I wrote an article, and KOT says it's up by the time you guys hear this. So, yay, check it out. Hear my thoughts.
Perfect.
Tell me I'm done.
Perfect. So did anyone hear this whole thing with Contradict? Like, blue and three. And all we saw was, like, the art and the mana cost on this card, and people were speculating that it was Force of Will.
Yes, yeah. Common.
Yeah, we were all just trolling each other.
Yeah, come on. No way.
No.
That was dumb, right?
For what it's worth, though, the art would have been a very good Force of Will art.
It would have been a beautiful Force of Will art, but it would have also been a beautiful counter spell draw card art.
Yes.
Which is, yeah. So. Just be happy with that.
Does it need?
But my question,
yeah, go ahead.
Why is it strictly worse than the previous counterspell draw card from Urza's Saga, whatever the heck
Dismiss.
That was called? Dismiss. Yeah,
I was before. Literally just gonna say, like, why couldn't it just have been Dismiss?
Yeah, with even the art, even the art fits for it to be Dismiss.
Yeah, the look of disdain on the look of, like, fuck you,
yeah,
on
yeah,
the dragon's face. Yeah,
yeah, like, just fit.
What if this card up until, like, the 0 minute was Dismiss, and then they're like, in their future league, found out that Dismiss was just too good?
Well, then they're wrong.
This is never too good because it's Dismiss.
Yes.
Well, Dismiss, our counter spells are pretty terrible.
Dismiss
right
isn't even cube playable.
I feel like, especially, well, the cube playable threshold's pretty high. But, yeah. I feel like this card is just unnecessarily bad. Like, could have just made it slightly less bad at 4 mana and call it Dismiss, and then we'd all be happy.
Well, what was the counter target creature spell draw card? What was that one called?
The one that's like 3 mana? Or is it also 4?
4 mana. It was 4 mana.
That's even worse.
I know.
Oh, okay.
But the whole point I'm making is that card actually saw a little bit of fringe play. Like, it saw some sideboard play.
What? Really?
Really?
Yeah. Something Bones or something like that, was it?
Something Bones. Yeah, I remember playing Something Bones.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Something Bones.
Not at all!
Something also, Bones.
I've never heard of it.
I feel like Contradict with the, I mean, for those who aren't paying attention, look up this art, because it's really a dragon, like, doing, like, a Pishaw, like, go away, naughty spell. And I feel like the flavor text really should be, ain't nobody got time for that.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm going to get someone to alter it, and then they're like, how do you want the alter done? I'll be like, I want you to alter the flavor text. I'll be like,
yeah.
Huh? Custom alter flavor text. It's a new thing.
Jay, are you saying this is going to be bad in New Standard? Or no?
Dismiss or whatever?
Yeah, the
Contradict,
new one.
Yeah.
Contradict.
Yeah, I don't think I would play this card, probably.
I think it's terror bad. I think it's the worst. Prove me wrong, universe. Prove me wrong.
Like if
hey, if people are excited to play Ojaiji's command or whatever like that.
Ojaiji.
Yeah. I don't know how to fucking say
bone
these godforsaken names.
Ojutai.
Bone something. Ojaiji.
Ojaiji.
Fucking unbeatable super bomb. Ojaiji.
Four different things. Four things. That at least, I mean, they're all bad things, but at least it does four different bad things.
Yeah, but this thing does the two things that you do.
Yeah, I guess it's like the cryptic command to your Ojutai's command. You know what? Right. Dismiss or contradict is basically cryptic command. You're right.
No, I don't think that. I'm just saying that you're probably going to counterspell and draw a card.
Well, yeah.
Well, counter's a creature spell only.
Garbage. Suck it, Ojaiji. You command nothing.
I feel like I'm really disappointed.
Bone Ash is the card I was trying to think of.
I feel like I'm really disappointed there's
Bone something!
There's not more rebound spells. I want more rebound spells.
Yeah, actually, I am too. Like, I actually wasn't excited for the rebound to come back because I knew they would kind of mess it up. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, like, rebound, right on. That's a cool mechanic. That's actually a cool mechanic. And then it's just kind of...
I feel frustrated with rebound because they screwed the pooch the first time around in Rise of the Eldrazi. There was, like, no good playable rebound cards. And I was like, all right, they're bringing rebound back. Finally, playable rebound card. And there is.
No.
Yeah, it was, like, Stagger Shock, and that's it.
Yeah, it was, like, Stagger Shock in Standard and Limited, and then maybe...
The unblockable one.
The green pump spell.
The white one saw fringe play too, where you like draw cards if you have more life or whatever.
Was in the Soul Sisters deck, and then there was the white one that gave protection, which was seen play. And then there was the Stagger Shock, which saw play, and there was the unblockable one that saw play.
Distortion Strike. It still sees play in Modern today.
And still sees Modern play.
Oh, so Distortion.
There's eight rebound spells. One of them is rare, which is the return target permanent. You've got the one that makes a 2/2 djinn for 5 fucking mana. That's sorcery speed.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? Why couldn't that be an instant?
At instant, I think at 5 mana is fine. You've got Void Squall, which is blue 4 sorcery, return target non-land permanent. Sorcery. Still terrible. Why are all the rebound spells sorcery? Like, wouldn't it be sweet to just be, like, end of turn fucking Void Squall, and then, like, you instantly get the rebound, so it's like a twofer? Yeah. Like, that's how you justify 5 mana for a bad boomerang.
Yeah.
Tygum Strike, which is +2/+0 until end of turn and can't be blocked. Rebound for 4 mana sorcery.
Hold on. Did you say there's one that makes a 2/2 Drake for 5 mana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With rebound.
That, I need to rage about this for a minute because that's the worst. That's like Tauren's invocation on like unsteroids. On like. The worst of that's the worst.
It's real bad. Yeah.
Yeah, like that, and like again, like how is it more? How is it too powerful at instant or 4? You know what I mean? Like
at instant, it's a powerful trick.
So sight beyond sight, blue 3 sorcery. Look at the top 2 cards of your library. Put 1 in your hand and 1 on the bottom of your deck. This is sleight of hand. Okay, sleight of hand is a 1 mana cantrip in Modern. Okay, rebound cost all of a sudden. And it's an instant. Isn't sleight of hand an instant? Yeah, so this is...
No, it's not.
So for 3 extra mana, rebound costs 3 mana.
Yeah, like, that's horseshit.
Right? Like, just real, real bad. Ajutai's Breath is a 3 mana one that taps target creature. It doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. That one has rebound. That one, I think, is actually playable, especially in the limited environment.
But yeah, in limited, I really like it.
Huge and limited, but that's about it. Like, it's basically just a funky frost breath.
Yeah, but, like, if you cast it at the end of your opponent's turn, right, and then it rebounds right away, so you can kind of, like, take out 2 of their guys right away, which I think is sweet. But,
so then it's almost as good as frost breath. I see what you're getting at. Cool.
The only one that I think may see any play whatsoever in standard is Center Soul.
Yes.
Which is probably going to see some play in the heroic builds. It's white one, God's Willing with rebound.
Ugh.
Oh, that could be a thing.
So, that's not even exciting, or like though, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's
It's like, oh, that's a card that somebody might put in, like, the blue-white heroic deck or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Artful Maneuver might fit there, too, but I doubt it. But, I mean, like, it's white one instant. Target creature gets +2/+2 till end of turn with rebound. I feel like the rebound spells in general, if they are instants, like, their value goes up tremendously.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, almost none of them are instants.
Almost none, yeah. There's, like, two that matter.
I feel like this is another case of like, hey, we're going to give you a cool mechanic and then make it entirely pointless.
Yeah.
It's like scavenge all over again.
Oh, man, scavenge.
Yeah. All right. Well, sweet. I guess if you guys haven't yet, go register for the pre-release at Face-to-Face Games in Toronto.
Or Montreal.
Although, but since this episode's been out, we've been talking a couple hours, it's probably sold out by now. If it wasn't sold out before, it's probably already sold out by now.
Check, find out.
Yeah, we should have started.
Run, don't walk.
That's right.
Awesome.
We have a story, Jay, that you need to read.
Sure.
And then we can wrap it. Sup Stevie's comment is actually really good for those that want like a poop style story.
Yeah. And it's worth reading. Go read the comments.
It's worth reading as well.
They're so good.
So good.
Okay, so a while ago, somebody sent us a Chipotle Challenge story, part one. I don't actually remember this. But now we have part two. So I'm going to read that. As promised, episode two of the Competitive Eating Anecdotes. Enjoy. Grudge match. Two employees locked in a war of words that could only be settled by some real alpha male bragging rights. Enter the Chipotle Challenge. This linchpin of the competitive eating circuit I oversee as Director of Research and Development. Is this real? This can't be real. It's a crowd favorite and a store favorite. So many people came to see the two men square off over tightly wrapped carb bombs that the manager of the store threw in 10 free burritos to the winner of the contest. Sounds like the winner of the contest really needs 10 free burritos. Here's the rules. Eat 2 Chipotle burritos as fast as possible. You can have your choice of meat, beans, toppings, etc., but each burrito must clock in with a load of at least 1,150 calories. Oh, my God. Drinks are optional. 208 grams of carbs will make them necessary, though.
Jesus.
What the fuck? The two competitors battled mightily with money, reigning victorious over Chooch. Great names, guys. The time? 14:53. Not bad, we were just getting started. 3 years later, Money was set to defend his honor, because he survived, apparently, and his title at the exact same game. His competition was Diabetes, a diabetic who... Why is he competing in an eating contest? I still don't know. Bridesmaid, a bro of a man with a competitive streak that makes Trevor Humphreys look like a Pogs player, and Smith, another bro of a man with a matching furor for competition. Smith started out in the commanding lead. He polished off his first burrito in 2:55. That's under 3 minutes. Bridesmaid and the Beatus finished their first burrito at 3:22 in a dead tie. The defending champion Money crawled up to the pack, though, like a marathon runner, well-paced with his eyes on the finish line. After finishing his first burrito, after the other three, he continued to pound the, quote, Mexican, unquote, food down, finishing in first with a record-breaking time of 10:24. Diabetes held course by finishing at 12:50, with Bridesmaid at 14 and Smith at 16. Now, I don't need to tell you how disgusting this is to watch. It's not a nice thing to chew. But we had found our format. This was the bar to which all other competitions would be held. And indeed, the third event took place almost 2 years to the day. This is like a 6-year story, wow. The most recent event pitted 6 competitors against each other. Money had since retired to the board of directors of our competitive eating group, leaving the 6 to duke it out. Smith, trying again, having trained appropriately this time. Bridesmaid, so named here for having competed so many times and always coming up short. I guess I could have called him Raging Gumby. Shots fired. Troll, the future winner of the KFC Double Down Challenge I wrote about last time. And Aaron, a peach of a man. Brick, an intern in over his head. And Royal, a human twig, not unlike Kobayashi. The first burrito split times tell their own story of a group of competitors that just plain old don't care about their body. It went Brick, Troll, Smith, Bridesmaid, and Aaron with 318, 252, 20, 218, and 210.
210!
All but Brick smashing the first burrito record, but none like Royal, who finished 142. I dare any of you to eat just one burrito in 2 minutes. It's impossible, but seeing it done was a thing of beauty. Large measured bites and a proclivity to swallow without chewing, like a duck sliding something down its gullet. We were watching a man born to eat. Everyone finished with Brick and Smith coming in over 10 minutes. Troll shattered the record with a 6:36 time, somehow losing to Bridesmaid, who shattered the record with a 6:02 time, somehow losing to Aaron, who shattered the record at 5:19. But they were just witnesses to greatness that day. Pippins to Jordans, Shiro's to Kibler's. Royal polished off his second burrito in 3:33. 3:33. Royal's reign of terror on the eating circuit began that day. What the fuck? Two Chipotle burritos in 3 minutes?
And they're like not small burritos.
No.
They are not. They weigh a lot.
They weigh a lot of pounds.
Two burritos in 3 minutes and 33 seconds.
You just die, right? Like, you just shit everywhere after that?
Wow.
I can't even imagine eating in two burritos in 3 minutes. Like, I'm trying to do it in my head, and it's taking longer than 3 minutes, just in my mind.
My wife bought me a burrito today, like a, what's that place? Mucho Burrito. It's
yeah, that's like the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got like a large one. She bought me a mucho one. I couldn't even finish the fucking thing.
Right. So imagine like a loaded up mucho one with like everything in it, right? Yeah. And finish two of them in 3 minutes.
No.
No.
Now mine was a steak one, and the steak one's a little dry. It's a little bit harder to eat. Like if it was like a pork one, I probably would have finished it.
In 3 minutes?
Not in 3 minutes. Fuck no. No.
Fucking dirty liar.
No, what do you mean, dirty liar?
He said he didn't finish it in the first place.
Yeah, I just wanted to finish the fucking thing. I didn't want to do it racing.
Wow. Good
Speaking
Lord.
Speaking of ridiculous eating competitions, Scott, did you ever have a Matt Mealy at the store?
Yes, of course.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Are we going to have a hot mealing on mealing action? See which one of us can actually finish it first, whether it's me or mealing?
I want to, because we're going to do pancakes on Saturday, I want Tony to make Matt Mealings, but with pancakes instead of pieces of Texas toast.
It would be like
Matt Mealing.
Okay, but like, wouldn't you need to then put like, instead of pulled pork, you'd have to put like shredded ham or something? Like,
leave everything the same. So for those who don't know, The Matt Mealing is an abomination that was created at Face Face Games Toronto when our good buddy Matt Mealing decided that there was no menu item big enough for his appetite. So he requested a special sandwich just for him.
Wow.
So the Matt Mealing involves 4 slices of bread. So visualize this in your mind. You're going to start from the bottom up. So we've got a piece of Texas toast with Caesar salad dressing.
What?
Chicken and bacon.
With Caesar salad dressing?
But don't question it. It's good. It's bizarre. So Caesar's, instead of like a regular mayo, you do like a Caesar dressing with the garlic. So it's toast, Caesar dressing, bacon and chicken, then bread, then grilled cheese, like melted cheese, because you make a grilled cheese that goes in the middle. And then on the top of the grilled cheese is the pulled pork and lettuce and tomato. And then the last piece of bread. The whole thing is taller than it is wide.
Jesus.
Yep. Yep. Don't ask Tony to make you one because it's like a 20-minute ordeal.
You're also ruined for food forever. So don't.
Someone's like, hey, do you want to eat food, and you're like, no, I had a Matt Mealing, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't really have to ever eat again. So.
Like six weeks ago, I had one, I'm good.
Yeah. So it's gonna be exciting. We had almost Mealings. No.
Mini mealings.
We had mini mealings. I think we, were they mini? No, they weren't even mini. No, we had full blown mealings last time at the pre-release.
Did have a full blown mealing.
Yeah, we did.
Just for you.
Yeah, they were delicious. You want to do them with pancakes?
I think it's the only. Maybe we can make it a ball. You know, like a giant rolling ball of that mealing. Because pancakes are round, right? Balls are round.
Balls are round, yeah.
Balls are round.
It's the fact of life.
Kelly 2015.
So you know what I could see you doing? Is you can, you know how like they've got the breakfast crunch wraps?
No. Enlighten me.
At like Taco Bell, they've got these breakfast crunch wraps. And their promotion is that they basically take everything that you would normally have for breakfast and they stick it inside this wrap.
Oh, is this the thing with the hash brown in it?
So there's a hash brown and there's sausage and scrambled eggs and bacon. And like a tortilla in the middle, and separating like whatever is separated. There's cheese, and then they wrap it all up in this huge tortilla, and then grill it shut. So it's like this like round thing. Like it's almost like a frisbee disc, right? Except like it's thick, and you just eat it, and it's like your entire breakfast in one hand. But you could do it like that, except that you would need two hands to eat it because it would be so tough.
Yep.
But you would have to go and buy, like, absurdly large tortilla shells.
We're working on trying to get absurdly... It is unbelievably challenging to get absurdly large tortilla shells like you would get at a Mucho Burrito.
Unless you're, like, making them yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you can just make them yourself. But I don't... No, we're not doing that.
Yeah, quit being lazy.
Yeah. Call me a cop-out, but we're not making 14-inch tortilla shells on our own.
Fair enough.
Bitch.
Yeah. Cop-out Kelly. It could be a thing. I don't
know. Cop-out Kelly and Scumbag Schofield.
There we go. We start a 1960s-style superhero troupe.
Sweet.
Wonder Twin Powers activate?
Yeah. We'll walk up the sides of buildings, but we'll just do some clever camera work. You know, bad
ass time. Nice.
Yeah. All right.
I just have a feeling like we would be the two drunkest people to come out of a bottle service.
By far. Oh, wow. Our reference episode. What was that episode? I don't know. For those who don't know how drunk Jeremy and I were, we'll have to go through the archives on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys were feeling not much pain until the next morning.
I still cannot believe that I judged for 12 hours.
I still can't. Like, that's why you're my hero.
I consumed four Red Bulls. Sorry, four Rockstars. During that day of judging.
Yeah.
Wow. That's more than I've ever in one day.
It was not good. It was not good. And I didn't puke any of them up. I'm a champion.
Good for you.
I dry heaved into the sink and then held my head up while I fell asleep on my arm.
Oh, man. All right. Well, everybody, come on out. Enjoy the pre-release. Go enjoy pre-release. Support your local game store. Tune in next week. We'll have all of the stories about our pre-releases, and they will be awesome and laden with superior food and excellent environments and good friends and good times.
Yep.
Sick rips. Thanks and bad beats. Yeah, of course. Glad you could join us. The week before pre-release seems like the perfect time.
Yep.
I love you all.
I love you all. Yes.
Bye.
Seriously, read Substevie's comment. It's fucking awesome. Yeah, it's really awesome. So thanks for the comments, everybody. We love you, and we will see you all next week. Bye.